We're not even good dancers.
No, but we are spicy, crunchy, grilled, and melty. Exciting taste here to deliver what you crave.
Well, I do have a thing for melty and grilled and spicy and crunchy. Is that taco wearing a police hat?
Yes! Then he'd like to ask you a few questions, ma'am.
To satisfy your late-night craving, head to Taco Bell and feed your need for all that is crunchy, spicy, grilled, and melty. All the exciting taste you need, when you need. Want to spice up the night? You've got to think outside the bun. Open till 2 a.m. or later. Hours may vary by location.
Attention, local musicians. McGregor's needs your help. McGregor's prides itself on being the place downriver to see the best live music Metro Detroit has to offer. To continue to be the best, this is where you come in. McGregor's would like to invite you to drop off or mail your demo to them so they can continue to showcase the best live music in the area. If you're looking for a new spot to play and want to work with a place that'll treat you right, then McGregor's is the place for you. Just stop by or mail your demo. It's that simple. Have the night off and want somewhere cool to hang? Every Tuesday is Power Hour and a Half. All bottled beer and mixed drinks are just $1.50 for an hour and a half. McGregor's has great food and a fun atmosphere. Come in and enjoy a variety of great menu choices, including 24-ounce steaks and crab legs, as well as soups, salads, and tons of other choices. McGregor's at Telegraph Road near West Road in Brownstown Township. Call for more info at 734-675-3870. Help McGregor's to continue to feature the best live music downriver. Get your demo to McGregor's.
You're listening to the award-winning Night Call, the Riff's Phone-In Talk Show on 101 WRIF Detroit. Now, here's the host of Night Call, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much. Welcome, everybody. Pleasure to be with you. Another Sunday night emanating from the Motor City, going all around our listening area, and, of course, via the World Wide Web, all across the nation, all across the world. Welcome wherever you are listening. Appreciate you taking the time to listen, to call, to email, to do whatever you do to connect up with the program. Phone number 313-298-WRIF. You know, I've been doing this for a little while, and I don't know what numbers WRIF is. Very frequently when people have those call letters like that embedded in their phone number, they say the numerical thing. I mean, I know, don't bother to write me or anything, because I could look at the phone number, but you would think by now I could memorize that. Memorizing isn't my high suit, though, I have to say. Remember when I played an instrument, or when I tried acting, I can't remember stuff like that. I mean, I remember facts, something from 1682. Actually, I don't know what happened in 1682. Probably a lot. Anyways, so it's 313-298-WRIF. We do not have a toll-free number, but hey, rates are cheap this time of night. Many of you got those plans where it doesn't cost you anything, so you can call from anywhere in the country. If you want to email me, if you're bashful, or you would just rather have a little short message read on the air, is a possibility I will do it. I get more than I can ever read. That's calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com. My personal website, connected with nothing and nobody other than me, is peterwerby.com. PETERWERBE.com. You can listen to the stream on WRIF.com or radiopower.org, and the program is repeated tomorrow, Monday, on radiopower.org. When I give times, they are always in Eastern Time. What is it that we went through this? Greenwich Mean Time -5, I think. If it is, don't write me. If it isn't, write me. All right, and then it's all archived at whiterosesociety.org. Well, I had a wonderful time this weekend, although it's been hot as hell. I mean, people say, oh, global warming is nothing. Could be just another hot summer, but it's been hot and steamy here. And this was the 13th annual Concert of Colors, sponsored by a group called Access. It's an Arab community resource center, but they do things for the entire community. They're wonderful people, and you may have heard me interview Ishmael Ahmed, who is the head of the group and has put together so much for everyone, not just for the Arab community where the center is in Dearborn, but for the entire community. And one of the biggest gifts is the Concert of Colors. And he got on stage. I mean, and the deal is, it's all free, for one thing. But the deal is, there's performers representing the entire rainbow of people in our community and that exist around the world. So Ishmael got out on stage before the performance by Khaled and Don Was. Khaled is one of the premier performers in Europe. You may remember he had a hit with Sting. Probably didn't make it like the WRIF because it really wasn't rock and roll. More like what we call world beat music. But anyway, he, for his concerts, maybe a couple thousand people there. If it was in Paris, for instance, and instead of being free, it was like $50 a person or something like that, it'd probably be 25 or 30,000 people. So we were really lucky. This is a world-class performer, and he was there with Detroiter Don Was from Was Not Was, and it probably about 10 or 11 people playing on the stage. But before that, Ishmael Ahmed came out, and he said, "Are there any Arab people here?" And there's this huge roar comes up, and he says, "Is there any Latino people here?" Other people gave this huge roar. He said, "Are there any people Europeans?" Meaning, you know, people like myself and all that. And I wasn't quite as enthusiastic as the other groups, but you know, we were there. "Is there any Asians? Any Native Americans? Any African Americans?" And on. And he said, "This is what our community is all about. This is what the world is all about." And the performances went from rock groups like Detroit's Dirt Bombs to an incredible woman from Nova Scotia singing Scotch and Irish songs. She was playing the fiddle, tap dancing, and 5 months pregnant. And so you would think, well, what kind of people are interested in? Essentially, it sounded a lot like bluegrass music, which is, you know, Scotch and Irish stuff, the basis of bluegrass. And yet there were that rainbow of people sitting there and listening to that. And they had a Chinese group, again, everyone listening. So besides being absolutely terrific music of every possible genre in the world, literally, it was all the people brought there together as well. Not to say that people can't group separately and can't enjoy their own ethnicity and all that, but sometimes it's good to bring it all together. So we all could get along, and it's a model. Because you know who's not in it? Politicians, ideologues, people with grand ideas to alter the world to their making, that are going to do whatever is necessary, including wars. You know, they always get to violence. You ever notice that? The people that really want to change the world in their direction, no matter what other people think, they always turn to violence. I mean, because sometimes, I'm not trying to say that there aren't times for violence, and particularly for defensive violence. In other words, the colonialists in the United States, colonists, rather, who said, "Hey, we're, you know, goodbye, England. This is our Declaration of Independence." So they didn't attack anyone. You know, we were attacked and defended ourselves. So sometimes that has to happen. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the messianic people. I'm talking about the statements that come out of, and you fill in the blanks. I probably should be kind enough to do it myself, but many of you will think that the comparison that I would make probably would be a little rude, to say the least. So you can do it for me. All right, 313-298-WRIF. I got a letter in the mail. Imagine that. I get about two a year, or two people a year write me. It's not really true, but two people write me regularly through the mail. You can do that. One Radio Plaza, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. You can find that on my website, peterwerby.com. This is from a longtime listener. Carl lives in Detroit, and he asked me, he thought I wasn't dealing with this well. So well, he says, "Is old age catching up?" Well, Carl must be 114 by now. I'm sorry, Carl, but you've been listening a long time. He's a wonderful man, but he's really irritated with me. He says, "Dear Pete, for God's sake, get with it." That's what Carl says to me. A caller mentions Karl Rove, and you say it's too complicated. It's too complicated, huh? It's too complicated for Bubus Americanus, this is, you know, species, who's dumb as a sack full of doorknobs. Well, I'll tell you what. I mean, now, as every day goes by, as every week goes by, you get more and more of an idea who Karl Rove is and what the issue is. But I know there's lots of you listening, particularly people that aren't talk show devotees, but primarily are riff listeners. They're saying, "Karl Rove, who the hell is that? What position does he play?" And I'm not making fun of you. I'm trying to keep track of the utter corruption and dirty deeds of this administration is really tough. Is really tough. And I know, like, I was on vacation, what was it, 2 weeks ago? Gee, Feels like I never went. Anyway, I didn't see anything. I mean, actually, we got the paper a day later. But we didn't get any television, no cell phone, no computers, anything like that. And that stuff just isn't there. And just isn't in your consciousness. You really have to go out of your way to find out about this stuff. But these are really important issues. And I guess I believe everyone listening thinks so, or they wouldn't be listening, whether they agree or disagree, or whether they're just here to listen to the discussions. I mean, if you didn't care about these issues, if you didn't care about this country, if you didn't care about the world, if you didn't care about the environment, if you didn't care whether we have, what, like I'm saying, a corrupt administration or not, you wouldn't be listening. So, Karl Rove is the assistant to the president. Many people say he is actually the brain of the president. And he's been with Bush for a long time. Has a terrible reputation as a dirty player. Extraordinarily dirty player, and he is now accused, in the media at least, of exposing the name of a CIA agent, a covert agent, and doing this as a retaliation against a former ambassador who went to Niger, it's a country in Africa, and further exposed that what Bush said about the war in Iraq, the justification for it, the rationalization for it, the rationale for it, was a big fat lie. That everybody has died in it, and upwards of 100,000. I'm not differentiating between Americans and Iraqis and Brits and whoever else has been it. 42,000 Americans who have suffered some medical incident enough to take them out of the field of battle. And if there is somewhere between 25,000 and 100,000 dead Iraqi civilians, what do you think the injured rate is? Maybe another 200,000? Maybe another 300,000? So this has become a slaughterhouse there. Because of Bush's lies of invading Iraq, people say, well, they're better off than they were under Saddam. Well, you know, it ain't necessarily so anymore. In terms, I mean, Saddam killed people, and the society was one of stability. And believe me, folks, I was criticizing Saddam Hussein when Bush's father and Reagan was supporting Saddam Hussein. When the Secretary of War went over there then as an emissary of the Reagan administration and gave a pair of golden spurs. I'm talking about Donald Rumsfeld. Gave a pair of golden spurs as a gift from Ronald Reagan to this butcher that was a U.S. asset then. Right? So, now it turns out the Vice President Cheney's chief of staff, Louis Libby, was a source along with the president's chief political advisor for a Time story that identified a CIA officer, the magazine reporter said on Sunday. In order to quell a chorus of calls to fire Deputy White House Chief of Staff Karl Rove, Republicans said that Rove originally learned, and then they've got this whole line of crap, but I mean, it's a matter of when Rove is going to resign, not if. I mean, they're gone. He's history. And probably at some point, they'll just go, okay, all right, let's get rid of him, and then everybody will forget it. But the point is, the story's not about Rove. In fact, I was reading something like this in today's New York Times in my favorite columnist, whose name I can't even remember at the moment, which will pop back into it very soon. I got, you know, there's an old Bob Dylan line, got a head full of ideas that are driving him insane. Well, that's always me, but don't worry about it. Anyway, that he said, this isn't about Rove, this isn't about Libby, this is about an administration that has lied on every possible political issue that it's presented to the American people, and has driven from office, out of its own administration, everyone who had the temerity to criticize it, from budget directors to the general who said, you know what, we're going to need 300,000 or 400,000 men in Iraq to quell post-invasion rebellions. He's gone. What was his name? Sinisky or something like that. I can't remember. Anyways, they blew him out. They blew out the Secretary of the Treasury when he told some truth about the economy. They blew out their security advisor when he told the truth about September 11th, and on and on and on. Well, this leads me into afterdowningstreet.org. Hopefully you know what the Downing Street memo was, or memos, or that what's now being called the Downing Street minutes. In this, after meeting with the Americans, a Brit writes that they are fixing the intelligence around the policy. The Americans are fixing the intelligence around the intelligence. In other words, as we know now, if you've been following this at all, that Bush made a decision, or probably Karl Rove did, now's the time to invade Iraq. This is 2002. They knew there was no weapons of mass destruction. They would not have invaded if they knew that they had them. And they had to fix the intelligence around the policy. They wanted to do it because they had a long-term strategy plan to invade and occupy Iraq, set up bases, control oil, and essentially make this an imperial outpost, figuring it would be a cakewalk. I mean, they're wrong about absolutely everything. There's two things. I heard a conservative talk show host say, well, you know, there's a difference between lying and being wrong. Well, yeah. So my extreme position, which isn't even extreme anymore because the majority of American people now believe this, think that he didn't tell the truth, which is a nice way of saying they're a bunch of liars. Come on, people are dead. Bush lied, people died. 2,000 coalition troops, minus a few, tens of thousands of Iraqis, and this was a political maneuver for this strategy that these conservative fascists have. And, you know, I mean, I was looking at some of their websites. I mean, they're getting hysterical. I mean, they're not getting so hysterical that anyone would run off and join the younger ones and say, well, you know, we want to, you know, the whole support for the war effort's eroding. People aren't joining, so we'll pick up the slack. They're going to stay here and keep the home fires burning or something like that. Chicken hawks. I know there's another chicken S for it. Can you even say that now? All right, so the Downing Street memo, it makes kind of its appearance. I mean, this is the smoking gun on one of the biggest scandals in American history. And the media doesn't even mention it. And then finally they go, okay, we got to mention it. And they mention it. Critics say that these memos say that it's convincing proof, yada, yada. And then they move on. Well, everyone is not willing to do that. The call for impeachment, for instance, is beginning to really resonate. Let's see. President Bush's televised address, this is from a couple of weeks ago now, isn't it? Televised address to the nation produced no noticeable bounce in his approval numbers, which is always what his speeches are about, with his job approval rating slipping a point from a week ago to 43%. So 33% of the nation we know are just out-and-out fascists, and 10% of them are just totally stupid, and so that's your 43%. This is in the latest Ogbe International poll. As a sign of continuing polarization, more than 2 in 5 voters, 42%, say they would favor impeachment proceedings if it is found that the president misled the nation about his reasons for going to war with Iraq. Well, he did. And it's highest in the western states, oddly. I guess we talked about this last week. 52% favors Congress using the impeachment mechanism. All right, so those of us on planet Earth who are not willing to allow this to just be forgotten are going to be attending events next Saturday. They are, if you can go to afterdowningstreet.org, D-O-W-N-I-N-G, afterdowningstreet.org, you can find out all about it. If you're not listening in the Detroit area, there's going to be over 200 meetings, congressional town hall meetings, public forums. There's going to be house parties. There's going to be dramatic readings of this, rallies, and even study circles, whatever the hell those are. Stuff across the Atlantic as well. Now, here I'm reading from this. It says, on July 23rd, events around the United States will mark the 3-year anniversary of the meetings at number 10 Downing Street in London. That's where Prime Minister Blair lives. That was recorded in the now infamous minutes known as the Downing Street Memo. So there's going to be a number of Congress people, and the man who has been leading the charge, is he the dean of the House of Representatives? He may have been there almost the longest. If not, he's the second. Congressman John Conyers of Detroit, and he is going to be holding a meeting on the 23rd. It's going to start at 2 o'clock at the Wayne State University Law School Auditorium. It's on the Wayne State University campus, right at Palmer and Cass. And you can go to afterdowningstreet.org and you can get all the directions even for that. So, or you can go to my website, peterwerbe.com, PETERWERBE.com. Okay, lots of other stuff. I don't know how much more we have to say about, since we're doing terrorism, all the BS fallback rationalizations for why we invaded Iraq, or why he invaded Iraq. We didn't. We didn't. The nation didn't. George W. Bush did. Illegally, against every international law, any international treaty, against the tenets of the United Nations, everything. Crime against peace. He belongs in The Hague. Not just impeachment. Anyway, so now it's down to terrorism again, because the only time he ever did any good was when he played the terrorism card. Take away terrorism, George Bush's population would be down just probably to the fascist 33%. Nobody else. And not even the 10% dopes that somehow just get moved along by slogans. But now the rationalization is better that we fight him here, or rather the opposite. Better that we fight him there than here. Which doesn't make a lot of sense. But a lot of the slogans of the right don't make a lot of sense. All this bumper sticker crap. If you just somebody call me and give me a bumper sticker slogan from the right or some of this patriotic pap and tell me exactly what they mean. I mean, I don't even understand support our troops.
Well, you sure don't sound like it.
No, tell me exactly. Call me up at 313-298-WRIF and tell me concretely what it means support our troops. I don't think you can do that. Or maybe you can. Maybe it means just supporting whatever they're doing, no matter where they are. Because it's not, you know, the troops aren't even in this. This is a dodge. What essentially then that turns out to be is supporting Bush's illegal invasion of Iraq. We don't do that. It's a bad idea. Death and destruction is all, and waste of money. A total waste of money. But in terms of are we getting more or less terrorists, we're killing the terrorists there. Well, it seems like the other way around. They're killing everybody in sight. Let's see. The uneasy truce inside the British Labour Party over the London bombings ended last night as an ex-cabinet minister and Labour MPs linked the attacks with the war in Iraq. Labour MPs said they would use a conference in London today to pile the pressure on Tony Blair to hasten the withdrawal of British troops from Iraq. As it is, they said first they may get out next year, maybe they might even get out this year. And Claire Short, the former cabinet minister, said in a television interview to be broadcast tomorrow that she had no doubt that the bombings were connected to the Iraqi conflict. Well, hello. The same thing happened in Spain, right? Also, new investigations by the Saudi Arabian government and an Israeli think tank, both of which painstakingly analyzed the backgrounds and motivations of hundreds of foreigners entering Iraq to fight the United States, have found that the vast majority of these foreign fighters are not former terrorists and became radicalized by the war itself. So it was the war that has produced terrorists, or freedom fighters, or thugs, or insurgents. You call them what you want, but George Bush has created a whole new generation of people that hate the United States and are going to take it out on other people. This is the studies which together constitute the most detailed picture available of foreign fighters, cast serious doubt on Bush's claim that those responsible for some of the worst violence are terrorists who seized on the opportunity to make Iraq the central front in a battle against the United States. So, that's what I have to say. My name is Peter Werby. The number here at Night Call is 313-298-WRIF. If you'd like to email me, call talkyes@yahoo.com. And we will go to the person that has been waiting the longest. It's Bud from Westland. Bud, it's Peter Werby. Thanks for joining me.
Hey, Peter. How you doing, man? Long-time listener.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hey, we got a bunch of people sitting out here in the backyard. Two things. One, the call letters are 9743.
Okay.
And because I call all the time. And we got a bunch of people out here supporting the troops. We got a Marine family here, two of us. There's a bunch of us out in the backyard, and we've all got Marines.
Well, what do you think about what I've been saying?
I agree.
Oh, boy.
I agree. And my youngest son, my oldest son just came home from Germany today after 6.5 years in the Air Force. He's just now went to bed. It's 6 hours difference their time. But my youngest son is coming home at the end of July for 14 days, and he is going to Iraq on August 21st, he's going to Iraq.
Now, you know that just every one of us listening, led by me, just hope that he can make it out with no harm to himself and doing as little harm as possible to other people.
We appreciate that, and you know, we, like you said, I can't think of a bumper sticker or anything that's, you know, that's a definite support of the truth. But you got a lot of families here. There's three families that we know of right here in Westland that their sons are Marines. Us, some Stokes and Porters. But there's a lot of other ones just here in Westland. There's like three other ones that my son and these guys are getting to join. And we're proud of every one of them.
I don't know. I mean, I have to say, it's up to you guys because it's your family. I don't know if this is the best time to be joining.
Well, you know what? After, my son David's been wanting to join the Marines since he was 12. When we went and seen my oldest son graduate on the parade deck at San Antonio, Texas, he said to my son Ryan right then on the spot, I'm joining the Marines. And then 8 years later, he joined the Marines. His thing was logistics. He was going to be stationed in Camp Lejeune for 4 years, and they came in the day before July 4th weekend and asked for volunteers to go for infantry, and he just jumped right up and said, yep, I'm there. So we think he'll do okay. He's a good kid. He's tough. We think he can handle it, and like I said, he's been wanting to be a Marine for 8 years, so he finally got his wish.
Well, best wishes to everybody and safety to everyone as well.
All right, thanks, Peter. And I just told everybody when we're out in the backyard, like I said, and I told everybody, if, you know, anybody wants to listen to somebody knows what they're talking about, you're the guy.
All right, thank you, bud.
All right, thanks, Peter.
I appreciate it. I forgot to say that our regular producer, Jay Hudson, is off for the night. Dave Duran from the WRF staff is the producer and phone screener. So say hello to Dave when you call. And, Dave, I know I'm supposed to listen to you, but I'm going to go to another Dave. I want to hear this explanation from Dave from Brighton. Dave, hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, Peter, how's it going?
Going good, thanks.
Hey, you know, it's not the support our troops bumper sticker. Is really support them morally, you know, keep them out of harm's way.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want our troops dying over, you know, over in Fallujah, Iraq and stuff. I got a cousin that's actually in Marines, and he's over in Fallujah right now, and I support him. I don't want him coming back in a body bag.
No, but I guess what I'm asking, Dave, how does that support him? I mean, in other words, if you can write letters, you can send emails, you can send, you know, packages of something you may want, but. I mean, I guess, you know, you actually hit it. I mean, not moral, but morale. I mean, you want to say, like Bud said from Westland, you know, we're proud of you, we support you in that kind of emotional way, right?
Yeah, we're trying to support them, and, you know, we don't want them coming back, you know, in body bags and stuff like that. And, you know, what I think what Bush is doing, and this is going to come out later on, is, you know, you don't see anybody terror, you know, bombing us here anymore because he took it over to Iraq. It's all over in Iraq now. And, you know, terrorists are coming from around the world to fight our guys in Iraq. And you know what? They're not coming over here suicide bombing us.
Now, you know, I'm knocking on plastic right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Dave. Thank you very much.
Yep, have a good one.
Appreciate your call. That's to some extent what Bush says, right? Here's Greg in Auburn Hills. Greg, hi, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Hey, this is
Greg.
Trip G from Auburn Hills.
I'm sorry, I talked right over. This is who?
Trip G.
Trip D, all right.
Trip G.
Trip G.
As in
Greg.
Going ballistic, you know?
Okay, go ahead.
All right, anyways, the main thing is I'm concerned about these cycle people that are going out there and they're blowing themselves up.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing this in the foreign countries and they're doing it on a regular basis.
Right.
That's what I'm concerned about.
Well, you know,
what is that?
Well, I don't, you know, there's been a lot written about the particular motivation where the suicide bombings have occurred, particularly in Israel, Palestine, and now in Iraq. But people fight wars in different ways. If these insurgents in Iraq had tanks and airplanes, they'd use them, wouldn't they?
I don't understand their aspect. They think they're going to find God or something? That's ridiculous. The good Lord does not allow them to do that.
Well, there is a debate within the Muslim community. The mainstream Muslim theology says that suicide bombings are against the against their religious tenets, but there's enough of them that have a different interpretation that say that when you're fighting religious battles against infidels that have invaded your land, you can do that.
So in reality, you would agree with that?
I agree that that's what they're doing. I don't think that there should be a war over there. I think the United States ought to get its booty out of there as quickly as it can, get everybody out of harm's way. And if those people fight it out among themselves, well, I mean, I guess that's the way it's going to have to be. The only thing that's happening now, we're just killing more people and they're killing our people.
It's sad but true.
Sad but true it is. All right. Thank you very much. Whatever you said you do with your name. Hey, it's Bill from Redford. Hi, Bill.
Hello.
Hi.
Let me just ask you, what are your solutions in general? Because I have heard you say that basically you had some solutions that were kind of radical, I believe, that, redistribution of wealth and so forth in our country and things of that nature.
What are you asking me for what my solutions are, like for Iraq?
No, I would say, forget, I think Iraq is pretty much a diversion,
uh-huh,
pretty much from what, you know, is going on in our own country. And, you know what I mean? I would basically say it's a revolution in our own country of some, you know, revolutionary change or whatever you want to call it.
That's all right with me as long as everyone agrees on it and it's democratic and nonviolent.
What's okay with you?
Revolution.
I mean, of some nature, it has to take place. Sure, if you're behind the times, such as, you know, I believe that, you know, the Midwest is in particular.
So the revolution should start in the Midwest. I'm for it.
Well, there's already been a revolution going on, you know, for quite some time, but it's not been so apparent, I would say.
God, no one emailed me. What is the nature of this revolution?
Well, it's more of, of the way, you know, people aren't really, they don't agree exactly the way culturally or, you know, there's a gap in this country, I would say even socially or in society.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, the people move along. Other people kind of want to just be mired in the past, which is okay, and as long as they don't try to force it on us. That's the problem. That's the problem with the authoritarian right, is that they want to take their ideas, no matter what it's about, and shove it down everyone's throat, including their religious beliefs. And so that's why I said that, I didn't use this phrase, but everything should be non-coercive. I think that's the key to it all. In fact, think about the history of the last 4,000 years. If people, leaders, men with big ideas, hadn't had felt that they had the right to cram what they believed or what they wanted to accomplish down other people's throats, we'd have a different world. All right, thank you, Bill. I got to take a break. We'll be right back.
This is WRIM.com. Want to get to the next level of your career? If working harder at your job won't help, work smarter by earning a bachelor's or master's degree at University of Phoenix, the nation's largest accredited private university. It's college designed for busy working adults. In most cases, you can earn a degree in only 2 to 3 years. To find out how, call 1-800-664-1391. At the University of Phoenix Detroit campus, the small classes are designed for working adults with busy lives. You'll cover more material in less time with convenient classes in the evening or on the weekend. At University of Phoenix, you can do this. Call now for a brochure on degree programs in business, technology, nursing, education, and more. 1-800-664-1391. Programs vary by campus. Call University of Phoenix now, 1-800-664-1391. That's 1-800-664-1391.
From the aquarium that's nice to look at to a real man's fish tank, sharks and all. Want to see just how cool your home or office aquarium could be? Then you need to stop by Aquatic Discoveries. Your aquarium's potential is about to take a great big step up, courtesy of Aquatic Discoveries. Whether you're an aquarium owner looking to upgrade or you're looking for that perfect gift, Aquatic Discoveries has you covered. Aquatic Discoveries has one of Metro Detroit's largest selection of freshwater and saltwater fish, invertebrates, crustaceans, displayed in over 10,000 gallons of water. Captivating displays, including a 750-gallon shark aquarium and a 600-gallon tranquil reef aquarium, 6,000 square feet of merchandise, including glass and acrylic aquariums, the finest oak cabinetry, and all of your aquatic supply needs. Whether you need a saltwater or freshwater setup, Aquatic Discoveries has you covered. Aquatic Discoveries offers complete design, setup, and maintenance programs with Aquarium Shine for a beautiful aquarium in your home or office. Call Aquatic Discoveries and Aquarium Shine at 586-795-FISH or stop by and check out their awesome showroom at 3665 15 Mile Road in Sterling Heights. That's Aquatic Discoveries at 586-795-FISH or check them out online at aquariumshine.com. And now, a word from the Riff Legal Eagles. Unless otherwise stated, all entrants for WRIF contests must be at least 18 years of age and a legal resident of the United States. A household is eligible to win one contest per 30 days every 6 months for prizes valued at $600 or higher. Radio Media Detroit and its affiliates, promotional sponsor, advertising and promotional agencies, and other radio and television stations in the Detroit ADI are not eligible to participate. One entry per person. No purchase or other consideration is necessary to participate in a contest. Void where prohibited. Prizes are non-transferable or redeemable for cash. 101 WRIF reserves the right to substitute any prize for one of equal or greater value. By participating in the contest, contestants consent to the broadcast and or publication of their name, voice, face, and or likeness without compensation. Participants listening online at www.wrif.com may receive audio that is delayed by as much as 60 seconds later than the over-the-air transmission, which could potentially affect chances of winning. General contest rules are available online at www.wrif.com or during regular business hours at the WRIF Studios, 1 Radio Plaza, Detroit, Michigan, 48220.
Like what you hear on the Riff? Then why not get your Riff Rock to go? Download all your favorite Riff tunes right now with the Riff Music Store online at WRIF.com. Riff Rock. Rocks. You're listening to WRIF.com.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much. Welcome back. Your phone call is at 313-298-WRIF. And was it Bud in Westland who gave me the numbers after all these years? 313-298-9743. Call talkyes at yahoo.com. What did I do with all this email I just picked up there? Oh, yeah, just a couple of them. One, I was talking about GMT, Greenwich Mean Time. So that's how you can, we're minus five usually, but four in the summer. But Greenwich Mean Time does not observe daylight savings time. This is from Jeff in Grosse Pointe Farms. See, John says, Dear Peter, do you think things would have been different, civilian support, world community support, etc., if the Bush administration was truthful with us and the world, even though it would be painful? No. I mean, actually, John, if Bush would have been truthful, there would have been no war in Iraq. I think it's as simple as that. Bruce wrote in and on behalf of people in the Tom Hartman chat room. This is a little complicated. Tom Hartman is a wonderful nationally syndicated talk show host who does not come into Detroit. But he said people can use his chat room during my program to talk. And they always invite me to do it along with them. Now, Tom does that. Tom does mornings out in Portland, is it? Something like one of these Oregon cities. And then he does his nationally syndicated show at noon. I don't know how this man does this. He does like 6 hours of talk a day. And at the same time, he is conversing with the people in the chat room. I can't do it. Sorry. But you guys can talk among yourselves. And anyways, I say hello to you, and I'm pleased that you're doing this. I was reading something that said that if you're on a cell phone while you're driving, you have a four times greater chance of getting in an accident than if you're not. And this, in some cases, worse than drunk driving. Saying that, here's Stephen, who's driving on I-75. Welcome to the broadcast. Take it easy while you're driving. Hey, Stephen.
Oh, Stephen, yes.
Yeah, you're on the air.
I'm not on 75 anymore, but
okay.
I'm on a hearpiece, so I'll be safe.
Okay.
But anyhow, my point is this. I listen every Sunday just to get the opposite viewpoint of usually what I go with. And you say, let's go for impeachment with Bush. But then I ask, okay, well, if we impeach Bush, who goes in? Who's the man then?
Oh, you're right. No, but if Cheney should go too.
Okay, well, okay, so then we get rid of Cheney. Who's next?
Ah! You're right. Who is it then? Is it the Secretary of State?
Speaker of the House? I don't know.
Speaker of the House. No, it's the Speaker of the House. Ah! You're right. No, I don't know.
That's my point is, okay, we keep going through these politicians and finally getting rid of them. But the thing is even though, you know, on the most part, I am a Republican, I mean, I sit here and I look at this and I'm like, okay, I see all this information coming in from Fox, from MSNBC, from you know, all these different viewpoints. It's like, okay, who's telling me the truth? How do I know when one of these people are actually telling me the truth?
You know, that is, yeah, I was just talking to some friends of mine, and I said frequently that people ask me, not every week or anything like that, but people say, I say this, they say that. How do we figure out which is correct? Well, I mean, we know now. I mean, well, for one thing, there are facts. You have to kind of pile them up and see if you're on a jury. I mean, the defendant says, I didn't do it, and here's the evidence. I have my alibi. I was over there. I didn't, I didn't rob the bank or whatever. And the prosecution is saying, yeah, here's the evidence. Well, some things are a matter of opinion. All right, so say something like abortion. That I would say that women have the right of reproductive freedom, and I agree with the Supreme Court and what have you. Other people say it's a life at conception, and it's killing, what do they say, stilling a beating heart, and hence it's comparable to murder. So those are sort of moral opinions or scientific evaluations that you can have on your own. But then it becomes a political question. Should people's views be translated into laws backed up by the armed force of the political state? In other words, say that my wife wants to have an abortion that doesn't agree at all with the people on the other side, but the folks that contending that it's murder, rather than trying to convince her that, want to call the cops on her.
Right. I see what you're saying, but I mean, on that point, you know, I agree with that, is that, you know, hey, a woman's body is just that. It's her body. and I don't care what anybody's belief is, it shouldn't be written into law that that woman can't do what she wants. Obviously, you know, you stop at a point saying, you know, the lady can't off herself or anything like that, but, you know, if, I mean, late-term abortion, yeah, that's pushing it, but, you know, within the two months, that I think.
Yeah, I actually, wait a minute, Steve, I mean, it was my fault. I kind of got us off on a tangent, but all right, so we know that Bush said, here's why we're in Iraq. So now he marshaled lots of facts. Remember, there was Colin Powell at the UN, did all these photographs and diagrams and testimony, and then we found out that this, in fact, is not the case. So that's kind of, you know, it's like that. I was quoting this conservative talk show host. He said, well, he wasn't lying, he was wrong. So.
Okay. Even if he was lying or even if he's wrong, it doesn't matter if there's no weapons there. I agree that probably we shouldn't be there. You know, mm-hmm. We should try and do what we got to do. But, okay, but since we brought up that, we're there. Now we got to start pulling out. Well, how are we going to pull out with, you know, without these guys just going completely crazy and, you know, just blowing, basically doing worse damage to that country than what we've already done to it?
So, in other words, if we have, about 130,000 troops, we can't do it with that. What happens when we take out 30,000 troops? We only have 100,000. What happens when we only have 50,000?
That's what I'm saying.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, the brainy guys in the $2,000 suits that are running the show here, they figured out how to get us in. Maybe they ought to figure out how to get us out. I mean, for one thing, I think if there was a declaration by the United States of withdrawal, but we wanted to continue to aid the country to help repair it, I think that that probably would be acceptable to all sides.
Right, and I mean, that sounds like a great idea, but then once again, you know, I mean, we are dealing with fanatics. Anybody who straps a bomb to their chest, I would call fanatic. But are these guys, you know, being fanatics, are they going to be able to say, okay, well, look, the U.S. says, okay, they're going to pull out by, you know, August 1st or whatever, we'll say, but they're going to leave some people in here, you know, the engineers and such, to help rebuild this place so we get it up and running again and everything hunky-dory. Now, are they actually going to abide by that, or are they just going to keep blowing up pipelines that we try and rebuild?
Well, you know? So essentially, you know, I actually think about this sometimes, Stephen. We're damned if we do and damned if we don't, and who the hell got us into a situation like this where there's a devil's choice either way? I mean, I don't want to tell you. Well, for one thing, you know, the United States said that they couldn't withdraw from Vietnam. I was just reading some history about this. They said they couldn't withdraw because there would be a bloodbath. In other words, there would be a civil war of such magnitude in South Vietnam, or in Vietnam, if we left back there in the 70s, that we had sort of like a moral obligation. Well, on the way to not allowing a bloodbath, we killed about 3 million civilians. So I don't know if one would be any worse than the other. What?
Oh, I didn't say nothing. I was just listening.
Oh, okay. All right. I have to move on, but thank you very much. And I agree with you. The question, I don't think it's cut and dried, open, and I think the question is open. But these geniuses that got us into it better figure out a way to get us out. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate your call. One of the things that Democrats have criticized Republicans for is they say that Bush went in there with no exit strategy. You may remember that I've said that repeatedly, that there is no exit strategy because the United States intends to occupy the country permanently. I mean, they have a compliant host government. What do they call it? What's the word for it? Puppet government, right. I mean, maybe even with a lot of autonomy. But the fact the United States is building 13 permanent bases there, has the most expensive embassy in the world planned. $1 billion they're going to spend, right? Closing the schools in Westland and Warren and Ypsilanti and Detroit. I'm just reading down from where some of you are calling from. And they're going to spend $1 billion building a building in downtown Baghdad. I mean, they can't do it now. Speaking, by the way, of abortion, USA Today's CNN Gallup poll said that 78% of respondents want another woman appointed. That definitely will happen. Bush sees how that's playing. 67% of people say they would like to see a Hispanic woman appointed. And thankfully, 68% think that Roe v. Wade, the decision that says get the government off our back. Remember, that was the Republican slogan till they want to get it on our back. 68% of the people said no, that we Roe v. Wade should not be overturned. So it's just, again, 29%. The fascist right, people that want to make this into a theocratic authoritarian government, of course, they say, yeah, we want the cops of this country to enforce our religious views. Besides having to go around, fight crime, save people, do what the police do, they want them also to enforce their religious theology. That's why I call them fascists. Absolutely. All right, let's see. Sometimes this happens. Dave Duran is our producer and screen phone screener for tonight, and you do not have which call to take next. Somehow, every once in a while, it just ain't up there. And if in about an eighth of a second it's not, I'll assume it's up there, and for some reason or other, we're having problems. 313-298-WRIF. Okay, I'll just take the person that's been waiting the longest. John from Warren, thanks for joining us. You're on the air.
How you doing, Peter?
Doing great, thanks.
Hey, listen, I was just calling because I had watched a documentary last week called All in Plain Sight. Have you seen that?
No, but remind me. That sounds familiar.
Yeah, it's basically the whole basis of the documentary. They did some research and whatnot, and after watching that movie, I'm thoroughly convinced that there is no way that an airplane hit the Pentagon.
Oh, that one, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what hit it, but it definitely wasn't an airplane.
Well, you know what, John? It's funny. I've seen a lot on that. In fact, I think there is even some on my website about it. And still, I think, come on, it's got to have been a plane. There's a plane missing. These people got killed. But I've seen those photographs, and you think, wait a minute, this did not get hit by a big plane.
No, there's no way. There's no way. I don't know what hit it. Maybe, like, you know, the documentary says that they think it was like a bunker buster missile.
But where's the missing plane, the 7, whatever it is, 27?
Maybe it's in the Atlantic Ocean somewhere. Maybe they shot it down. Who knows? Maybe those people are fictitious and don't even exist.
Nah, one guy, I can't remember his name, his wife got killed. I mean, he's a prominent Republican, even.
Yeah, but most of the people that I've seen, like on talk shows or whatnot, saying that they lost relatives or loved ones in 9/11, they were always on one of the planes that hit the Trade Center or the plane that crashed in the field in Pennsylvania. I never saw anybody say, "Oh yeah, my relative was on the plane that hit the Pentagon."
Hmm.
Who's to say the government didn't find a couple people that said, "Hey, you know, your such and such died in a car accident last week. Here, we'll give you a bunch of money. You say they were on this plane and
I don't know.
Get into the compensation fund."
You know, John, the conspiracy then gets so widespread that it's hard to keep it covert. I think the bigger question, and I'm not, like I told you, I've seen these photographs and they're pretty convincing. I mean, it does not look like a hole that was hit by a big plane striking the Pentagon. But why wasn't there a scramble of jets? There's on my website, there's a piece called "There Must Have Been a Military Order," and I just read a...
Who's to say we're not the ones that fired the missile?
Yeah.
I mean, the missile hit a part of the building that was under reconstruction. There was, like, hardly anybody, like, you know, in offices or anything working in that part of that building.
Yeah, wasn't there like 100 people killed? I mean, that's not like nothing.
Well, yeah, but it's not like if it had hit the other side of the Pentagon and several hundred people would have died.
Or more.
Yeah.
Or more. Well, I would suggest if you want to look at more, go to my website, peterwerbe.com, and the last name is WERBE.com. Go to the left, you can click on the 911 site, and a lot of questions are raised there. All right, thank you. Now, I've heard a lot about that, and I've been interested to see it debunked. You know what? I forgot to go to my favorite debunking website, Snopes, SNOPES.com, Snopes.com. Somebody do me a favor. I can't really do all this at once. But go to Snopes.com and see if there is a debunking of that it was not one of the hijacked planes that hit the Pentagon. Of course, some people will say, you know, Snopes is in on the conspiracy, right? All right. Since this is long distance, let me get this one, Dave. Hi, this is Rick from Toledo. Hi, Rick. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, Peter. How you doing? doing?
Doing good.
Good. Hey, I just wanted to let you know that the Times columnist to whom you referred, I'd say about maybe half an hour ago, was Frank Rich.
Oh, yeah, Frank Rich. I even forgot to remember it.
Right, exactly. And he and Paul Krugman are the are, in my view, the two premier, first-rate Times op-ed columnists.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's almost a paper that got something called Guts.
Yes, exactly. I mean, a little bit after the fact. I mean, as we all know. But those are the two we were talking about. And I was going to say, when did you guys go back to 11 o'clock?
Oh, about 1984 or something.
No, weren't you on like at midnight or something in the early 90s or something, or what, even 1 a.m. for a while or something, or no?
I don't know.
Because I had to stop listening because it was just too late.
No, it wasn't. I think at some points it was on at 10. One point back in the 70s, it was on every weeknight, 2 a.m. till 6 a.m.
Yeah, well, that was before my time. I started listening to you in the mid-80s, mid to late-80s, and then, like, in the early 90s, I thought you were up at midnight or even 1 a.m., which was,
maybe. I don't know.
As I advanced in age, it was just too late for me, but I'm glad. Are you on at 11 now regularly then?
It starts at 11, goes to 1 a.m. with phone calls, then at 2 a.m. there's two recorded interviews, and I can tell you right now, one's on the London bombing, and the other one's on the G8 meeting in Scotland on aid to Africa. And all that.
Great. Yeah. Well, you have a regular listener once again since you're back at 11, and I'm glad to have you back. And I just, you were stumbling for
Frank
Rich's name,
Rich, yeah.
So I thought I'd fill you in there. And then another name you were about the last caller about the Pentagon, that was Ted Olson, who's, his wife is, he's a former solicitor general for Bush. So that's, I guess I'm name dropping tonight. So.
No, that's all right. Well, in fact, I was just talking to our producer tonight, Dave Duran, and I was saying that a couple times people say always are kind of leaving out information, or you can't think of it. And I was saying, this is all in my head. The other talk shows, they have people working. They have like two or three producers working computers to get.
Right. Yeah. It's a miracle that you're still. I mean, that you're still even allowed on commercial radio. I mean, I think we're Detroit area. People are fortunate for that. I mean,
well, things are really going the other way in these liberal talk networks and all that, and some of these progressive and left talk show hosts are just appearing all over the country because
you've been around, the whole time.
Since the dawn of radio.
Yes, exactly, and I for one, I'm glad you have been, and now that you're back at 11, I will continue to be a regular Sunday night listener now. So
thank you, Rick. Thanks for calling in from Ohio. Bye now.
Take care.
One of the things that I don't know, I should have asked Rick whether he was listening on the air. Actually, the WRF signal is pretty big, so it's probably going down to Toledo, which is it's only what 60 miles or something. But you can listen online at wrif.com or radiopower.org, and the show is repeated. For those of you who can't stick it out, you can go to radiopower.org, and the show is repeated at 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. on Mondays, and then it's archived by whiterosesociety.org. All right. all right. If you say so, Dave. Here is Barry calling in from Detroit. Barry, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Peter.
Hi.
I remember when you rocked at WABX, brother.
I was there, man.
I know. Back in the old days, so was I.
Back in the day, as we say now. Yeah.
Well, we used to have fun then.
Well, we have fun now.
Yeah, we do. I just had a couple of comments.
Sure.
This is really simple statistics. I not necessarily agree with the war, but I'm rather fight it over there than here. And I didn't like what happened in 9/11. Let me finish. There's 130,000 troops since last July. In Iraq, 60 deaths. Washington, D.C. has had 80 deaths per 100,000 people since July last year. So our country, you're safer to go to Iraq with an army uniform on than you are to be in Washington, D.C. That's only one city.
What are you talking about? Tell me, what are you talking about again? Last time I saw these figures, there was getting up near 2,000 American deaths.
But it's a per month deal.
Yeah. Oh, you're talking. Well, I mean, I think that's kind of an indictment of the social political situation in Washington. But it's another question. I mean, both those are kind of these cliches that better. I mean, that's what Bush says. I mean, you can't just say things. You have to have them connected up to something else, some supporting evidence, and to say simply, it's better to fight them over there than here. I go, what does that mean? If we don't fight them there, then they're going to come here? I think we're lucky that they're not fighting on two fronts. And every day that goes by where they haven't done anything, the fact that we're fighting them over there doesn't mean it has nothing to do with what's happening over here. Hopefully, there's enough police activity, preventive police work and security and intelligence that nothing like this has happened. But we saw what happened in Britain. These were second-generation, well-to-do kids, and I guess one was like 30, who were outraged and enraged by what they saw the United States and Britain, in that case, doing in the Middle East. So rather than suppressing the number of terrorists, rather than eliminating or diminishing the number of terrorists, it increased it and has created situations like occurred in London.
Can we blame the terrorists instead of blaming Tony Blair and George Bush?
Well, listen, they're of a piece. They're what I said. They're the kind of people on both sides that want to force ideas down people's throats by virtue of violence and destruction. And I'll tell you, killing people with bombs in a subway, you know what they call what happened in London a few Thursdays ago?
Cowards.
You know what they call it in Iraq? No,
what?
They call it Sunday, or they call it Thursday, or they call it Tuesday. So what happens is that what we take as such a horror, rightly so, happens every single day in Iraq. It happens because of one and only one reason, and that's because of an invasion. What do we do with a man that's a brutal dictator? That's this awful character? Well, I don't know. Maybe people like George Bush the First and Ronald Reagan ought to have thought about that. Sometimes you create situations so bad that you've screwed up so badly that it's not real easy to get fixes. And what Junior has done is make things even worse.
You think?
Well, I don't know. 2,000 deaths on our side, as many as 40,000 injuries, as many as 100,000 dead Iraqi civilians, and many of them at the hands of the United States Armed Forces. The fact that people are pouring into Iraq to fight the Americans, that we now see this phenomena of domestic, local, homegrown citizens of countries allied with the United States, like Spain and Britain, beginning to suffer terrorism. I guess I think it ain't working real well. And I got to go, unfortunately.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
Hey, Tigers fans, this summer, why sit at home when you could sit at home? Plate, that is. Now is a great time to catch all the fun and excitement happening at every Detroit Tigers home game. You'll see plenty of homers by Pudge Rodriguez, Dimitri Young, Carlos Guillen, and all your favorite players. But a trip to Comerica Park means more than just baseball. While the Tigers are driving home runs, you could drive home in a brand new car during the Chevy Cobalt Drive One Home Giveaway, sponsored by your Detroit area Chevy dealers. Just buy a ticket to select Friday or Saturday night home games, and you could drive one out of here. Looking for a surefire hit? Hey, don't miss Friday and Saturday night fireworks, sponsored by Pepsi and Verizon Wireless. And with a weekend value pack, that's four tickets, four hot dogs, and four Pepsis for just $59. And you'll want to bring everyone from home. So for great giveaways like autographed balls, bobbleheads, collector cards, and jerseys, and for great baseball, this summer, catch a Tigers game. For tickets, call 248-25-TIGER or visit DetroitTigers.com and make Comerica Park your home away from home game.
From the aquarium that's nice to look at to a real man's fish tank, sharks and all. Want to see just how cool your home or office aquarium could be? Then you need to stop by Aquatic Discoveries. Your aquarium's potential is about to take a great big step up, courtesy of Aquatic Discoveries. Whether you're an aquarium owner looking to upgrade or you're looking for that perfect gift, Aquatic Discoveries has you covered. Aquatic Discoveries has one of Metro Detroit's largest selection of freshwater and saltwater fish, invertebrates, crustaceans, displayed in over 10,000 gallons of water. Captivating displays, including a 750-gallon shark aquarium. Aquarium and a 600-gallon Tranquil Reef Aquarium. 6,000 square feet of merchandise, including glass and acrylic aquariums, the finest oak cabinetry, and all of your aquatic supply needs. Whether you need a saltwater or freshwater setup, Aquatic Discoveries has you covered. Aquatic Discoveries offers complete design, setup, and maintenance programs with Aquarium Shine for a beautiful aquarium in your home or office. Call Aquatic Discoveries and Aquarium Shine at 586-795-FISH or stop by and check out their awesome showroom at 3665 15 Mile Road in Sterling Heights. That's Aquatic Discoveries at 586-795-FISH or check them out online at aquariumshine.com. Want to get to the next level of your career? If working harder at your job won't help, work smarter by earning a bachelor's or master's degree at University of Phoenix, the nation's largest accredited private university. It's college designed for busy working adults. In most cases, you can earn a degree in only 2 to 3 years. To find out how, call 1-800-664-1391. At the University of Phoenix Detroit campus, the small classes are designed for working adults with busy lives. You'll cover more material in less time with convenient classes in the evening or on the weekend. At University of Phoenix, you can do this. Call now for a brochure on degree programs in business, technology, nursing, education, and more. 1-800-664-1391. Programs vary by campus. Call University of Phoenix now, 1-800-664-1391. That's 1-800-664-1391. And now, a word from the Riff Legal Eagles. Unless otherwise stated, all entrants for WRIF contests must be at least 18 years of age and a legal resident of the United States. A household is eligible to win one contest per 30 days every 6 months for prizes valued at $600 or higher. Greater Media Detroit and its affiliates, promotional sponsors, advertising and promotional agencies, and other radio and television stations in the Detroit ADI are not eligible to participate. One entry per person. No purchase or other consideration is necessary to participate in the contest. Void where prohibited. Prizes are not transferable or redeemable for cash. 101 WRIF reserves the right to substitute any prize for one of equal or greater value. By participating in the contest, contestants consent to the broadcast and or publication of their name, voice, face, and or likeness without compensation. Participants listening online at www.wrif.com may receive audio that is delayed by as much as 60 seconds later than the over-the-air transmission, which could potentially affect chances of winning. General contest rules are available online at www.wrif.com or during regular business hours at the WRIF Studios, 1 Radio Plaza, Detroit, Michigan, 48220.
This is WRIM.com.
Back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
My name is Angel Rache. I'm a mother of two teenage children, and I fought all the way to the Supreme Court for the right to use the medicine that saved my life. I've been permanently disabled for 10 years, with an inoperable brain tumor, wasting syndrome, and several other serious conditions. For 4 years, I was in a wheelchair, in so much pain, I couldn't even hug my kids. The hardest part was looking in their eyes and seeing how much they were suffering because of my medical condition. The medicine that gave me my life back and gave my kids their mom back was cannabis, also known as medical marijuana. With medical marijuana, I can walk, maintain my weight, and I can be a mom. Without it, my doctors believe that I would die. To learn more about medical marijuana, contact Marijuana Policy Project at 1-877-JOIN-MPP or on the web at mpp.org.
All right. Welcome back. Peter Werbe here with you. 313-298-WRIF, or you can email me at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. If you're just joining us, we are talking about, guess what? The war in Iraq, and also, in fact, I mentioned this earlier, and I wanted to encourage people to attend these meetings all over the country. 200 events planned on the third anniversary of the Downing Street memo. This is a memo that just nails the Bush administration to the wall for lying about the existence of weapons of mass destruction. Essentially says, and I think it's almost a quote, that the intelligence was fixed around the policy. And the one that I'm going to attend in the Detroit area is on Saturday, July 23rd at the Wayne State University Law School Auditorium at WSU. Starts at 2 p.m. It's at West Palmer and Cass Avenue in Detroit. And if you're elsewhere, in fact, you can even plan an event yourself. So go to afterdowningstreet.org, afterdowningstreet.org, or you can go to my website, peterwerbe.com, W-E-R-B-E, and you can hook into this. And I mean, because so many of you call me, it's usually email. Oh, there's some calls. And you say, what can I do? How can I get involved in everything? I hate what's going on, but I feel so powerless. These are the kind of events that empower you. You don't have to wait for any politician. You don't have to wait for any election. We, the people, fix our intelligence around our policy, but in a different way, for peace. That doesn't sound good. It sounds like I'm saying we're gonna lie, like they lie. No, that probably came out wrong. It means that throughout history, that the people make history. And you can either be, you've heard me say this before, maybe you haven't. You can either be an object of history, that is, you're acted upon, or you can be the subject of history, you create history. And you think, oh God, it's impossible. I'm one person, I'm sitting here listening to the radio, I'm at work, I'm driving home, I'm falling asleep, whatever. How can I do anything? Well, think back about the sweep of history and what we know about how the common people, the average people, not the big shots, not the politicians, not the generals, not the wars, but the average common people grouping together have altered history, and almost always for the positive. The negative have been carried out by the great men with the ideas that they're going to shove down other people's throats, politically or even militarily. And so, this fits in. John writes in the calltalkyes@yahoo.com. You spoke of getting out of Iraq as soon as possible. I don't think our administration is going to withdraw ever, or at least until 2008 at the minimum. Stubborn. So knowing or assuming that we are committed for, well, not we, John, they are committed for the next couple of years, and knowing that insurgency is only growing in popularity, would you support a blitzkrieg type martial law or assault on the terrorists? Well, it's already happened, and it's been a horror show, absolutely a horror show. I mean, in two regards. Let me see if I have these grouped again. This is from, what is this? Well, the website is sfgate.com, like San Francisco, sfgate.com. The wars in Iraq and Afghanistan have already cost taxpayers $314 billion, and the Congressional Budget Office projects additional expenses of perhaps $450 billion over the next 10 years. So that's three-quarters of $1 trillion. We're paying for it all. Remember, Bush is giving tax breaks to the wealthy, wants to make them permanent, and what have you. So that leaves us, the middle class and the working class, paying out $750 billion. It's not going to go to increase Social Security benefits, or although, you know, Bush Co. said there was a problem, they've dropped all that, you know. But that would be enough to take care of any shortfall. We could have a national health program. We could subsidize our railways. We could have small classes. We could have perfect roads. We could eliminate slums. But $750 billion is going to be spent on this rat hole of a war. And, John, you ask me, since it's going to go on, should we have a Gestapo-type military assault on those folks? Let's see. According to, where is this, Michael Schur, a former counterterrorism official at the CIA who led the pursuit of bin Laden. This Michael Schur, he worked for the Bush administration. He led the pursuit of Osama bin Laden. He retired after writing two books critical of the Clinton and Bush administrations. You think, well, people say, well, Clinton, man, yeah. Well, Clinton ain't president. And the people that say, well, Clinton did that too, I mean, I always say to the Republicans, what are you saying, Bush is as bad as Clinton? And it says, let's see. Oh, yeah, Osama bin Laden doesn't have to win. He'll just bleed us to death. According to Scherer, he's well on his way to doing it. Now, this is what the Republicans claim that Reagan did to the Soviet Union, that he kept bidding up, I mean, in his warlike, frightening, nuclear confrontational style, that that's what broke the back of the Soviet Union. I mean, it's a long story. It's not exactly right. But the fact that they had to spend so much money on weaponry really did severely hurt their economy. It hurts any economy when the money of a society has to go on the military. Right now, the world spends $1 trillion a year on the military, and the United States, hey, we spend more than all the rest of the countries combined, or at least 50-50. We spend half a trillion dollars a year. The rest of the world spends $500 billion combined. And, of course, we're selling a lot of it to them as well. The Korean War costs about $430 billion in today's dollars. The Vietnam War costs about $600 billion. According to the latest estimates, the cost of the war in Iraq could exceed $700 billion. So I'm wondering, you know, you guys are out there and you're saying, wow, what if this and what if that? I mean, are we going to just drain our country and drain your pockets and my pockets for this fool's war, this destructive, it's going to be another Vietnam? And with it's going to start being up in the hundreds of thousands of civilian deaths of the country we're going to save and liberate. It's going to be up in the tens of thousands of American lives. And who's this commie here? He said the costs of the war were throwing U.S. fiscal priorities out of balance. It's dangerously irresponsible. Oh, this is a Republican senator from Nebraska, Chuck Hagel. And interestingly, John writes in, he said that should we have a blitzkrieg type or martial law type assault on the terrorists? Well, that's what happened in the city of Fallujah. Right now, let's see, transformed into a police state after last winter's siege, this could be the safest city in all of Iraq. Well, that's interesting. They, the United States there killed about, 1,700, pardon me, 1,700 people. These were mostly civilians. And they destroyed this city in order to save it, I guess. Anyone entering the city must show a badge and undergo a search at one time at six checkpoints. There's a 10 p.m. Curfew. Sorry, 1,500 Iraqis in a costly invasion that fanned anti-American passions across Iraq and the Arab world. The scenes of the destruction of Fallujah, and this was a city destroyed. This was a city destroyed. In the elections last January, 2% of the provinces, 2% of the voters there in that province went to the polls. A relatively secure Fallujah was a singular bright spot. About a third of the residents taking part. The city had 30,000 residents then. The city was decimated. Decimated, right? You remember what really that means? It means we always think it means just done a lot of harm. Decimated means that 90% of what was there has been removed. There was 300,000. The United States destroyed the city, drove out 90% of its residents. And you're thinking, yeah, I can hear somebody, who cares? We won. You know, be true to your school and all that. Right after the siege, this is from the New York Times 15th, what is this, Friday, I guess. Right after the siege, the Americans doled out $8 million to 20,000 people as an additional reconstruction payment. You know how they get it? You know how they do this? I mean, how do you think of it? They doled out $8 million. First off, you and I paid the $8 million, okay? Right? We paid the $8 million. Iraqi engineering teams estimated that 32,000 homes needed repairs. The United States destroyed 32,000 homes in the city of Fallujah. I mean, can you imagine in our town, 32,000 homes being, or in your suburb or something like that, what that would mean? Your house. Imagine your house being destroyed by troops from another country. What the hell would you be doing? So this is how terrorists are created. The total cost of reconstruction of Fallujah alone will cost $500 million. You're paying for that? I'm paying for that. We're not paying for what we need here in the United States. We're not paying, actually we should be paying that as war reparations. But you know how this gets paid out? The government of Alawi, who is the former prime minister, ordered a fifth of that to be paid out and was flown by helicopter to the main Marine base called Camp Fallujah. And you know how they paid it? They paid it in cash. They bring in huge helicopters filled with American cash and hand it out to people. And American contractors, you may remember a few weeks ago, I was reading that thing about how contractors were there with duffel bags, which they stuffed filled with money. I mean, is all of this irrelevant? All this death, all this destruction, all this looting of our treasury, all so George Bush can have an imperial oil outpost in the Middle East? And, I mean, I suppose if you're just going to keep repeating Bush's slogans, better to fight him there than here. That's not it. We're going to wind up fighting them here because of that. You say, well, we did anyway. Right? I know. What's got to happen is peace has to be made in the world. You can't make it with these crazy people. You know, we could go a long way towards it by getting out of their territory. I look and I see these photographs of these guys from Michigan and California and Florida and Ohio and New York, and they got full battle dress on. And then you show these, and they've got maybe 30 or 40 young Arab men blindfolded, their hands behind their back. And I think, doesn't anybody think it's odd that our troops are over there? Could we imagine that scenario being reduced in some, say, the United States in 100 years is weakened and a United Arab Army is marching through our town, destroying Detroit and Cincinnati and Fort Worth and what have you, kicking down doors to our house, frightening the hell out of our women and children, taking our men, you know, you or your descendants, tying your hands behind your back and blindfolding you? Why are they blindfolded? People in the first place, except other than the terrorizing. All right, let's hear some more from you. You've heard enough from me. There's another long one, which I'll read later. All right, wow. Amy, you've been waiting so long. My apologies. Thanks for joining us from Ypsilanti.
Hi, how you doing?
Doing great. Thanks for waiting.
Okay, well, you actually just started to touch on the point that I wanted to make. The thing is I think that the terrorists are the people that are doing these things in London and Spain and that hit us on 9/11.
Yeah.
And I think this word insurgent is just ridiculous. What it is it's people who don't like the fact that someone invaded their country,
mm-hmm.
which I don't like that they're killing our soldiers. I totally support our soldiers. But I understand, like you said, if someone invaded my country, I would fight back. And it's like we say that we care about the Iraqis and we don't want to leave them and we're making all these improvements and all this crap about, you know, helping the Iraqi women, which is just ridiculous to me. But when all these people are dying, they just say, well, they're insurgents. Well, they're probably terrorists. Well, they're this or they're that. And the Iraqi people's life, even though we say we're fighting for them and we're spending all these billions of dollars, their lives are not worth what our lives are worth.
Well,
that's how people look at it.
Well, yeah, you know the idea. Greek tragedy. Only the highborn can suffer authentic tragedy, according to Greek tragedy.
Right.
Yeah. So it's a. It. I don't know if you heard me earlier when I was saying that what happened in London is just called Sunday in Iraq because that happens
Correct.
Every day. And yet,
well, and you don't, you know, you hear about London, and we heard about it for days and days and days. And, you know, you hear a little blurb every once in a while, 15 suicide bombers, 50, you know, this, and people just keep saying, like you said, oh, they're crazy, they're crazy. Why are they doing this? I mean, some of these people, their entire family has been killed or taken into prison or something, and, you know, maybe that's what they feel is the only thing they can do. Now, I don't support it. I don't support any war. I support our military as far as them having a presence over there, and I support, I don't want anyone to die.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, I guess,
No, it's okay. I mean, sometimes, it's only through doing this for years and years that I don't get at a loss for words. I mean, this carnage is going on. I mean, look at this. We say, what kind of human beings would take part in a suicidal act of blowing themselves up in order to create damage? To some extent, people going over there from the United States military are in a potential suicide situation. You know what I mean? In other words, I don't know what the I mean, we've had, about 40,000 casualties, all told, injuries and death. People removed from battlefield assaults.
Correct, yeah.
And, for instance, if someone said to me, you would, they wanted me to go to Iraq, I'd say, you're out of your mind. I'm not going to go there. It's almost tantamount to suicide. I mean, well, I got a much better chance to get out, obviously.
Well, we say that sort of behavior is crazy, but then we reward our troops for heroism. My brother was in the Navy for 6 years. The boat that he was on, the ship that he was on, was named after a man who dove on top of a mortar to save the rest of his troop.
Uh-huh.
I mean, a ship was named after him, but these people are doing this to make a point to say, get the hell out, and we're saying they're insane, they're crazy, they're nuts. And it's just such a vicious circle that I don't see how, unless we just, somebody comes in and says, everybody get out, that it's ever going to stop. Because the Bush people are just going to keep saying, well, we need to do this, it's about the people, it's about the people. So it's like you feel guilty, you know, and telling me that, you know, even though I vote and I probably know more about the American government than half the people that voted for him, that I'm not a patriot, I'm sick of it.
I don't blame you.
That's all my...
Thank you, Amy.
Thank you.
Thanks for waiting. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. Here is Tom and Taylor. Tom, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air. Hi.
Hey, what's going on, man?
Just doing the show.
I'm 17, and my brother and my dad were just shipped off to Iraq.
Really? Both of them?
Oh, both of them. And they're not even really supposed to be. They're in National Guard, so.
Wow.
You know that goes.
You must be pretty worried.
Well, it's been hard, but, like, I don't know, my point is that one of the points I wanted to make was to the last caller, too. The reason that the insurgents that they call them insurgents, you know, and so on and so forth, are doing these suicide acts and everything, I mean, they have absolute faith. They're doing these things entirely voluntary, as opposed to our troops who are forced to go, that sign up for something completely different. You know, they're basically blindfolded and just, I mean, they have no idea what they're getting themselves into, and that's why, you know what I'm saying, the faith is so different, or at least in my opinion. I don't know if you disagree.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things I was thinking about, the Army just indicted 11 soldiers for abuse of prisoners. And, I think that's going to really piss off some of the troops over there. But when you're fighting a population, when you're not fighting an opposing army that has uniforms and you have direct rules of war, then you have the feeling of suspicion of absolutely everyone. That's what happened in Vietnam. And you read lots of stories about the GIs forming relationships with townspeople and what have you. But I got to believe that at a lot of levels, they always think, this guy's smiling at me during the day, giving me food and telling me that we're glad we're there. And then at night, he's an insurgent.
And, right.
Yeah, but see, part of it is, they've done these studies. Almost all the majority of Iraqis want the U.S. out of there. The Shiites, so they want to be able to, because of their numbers, because the Shiites that control the government now, they think eventually they will, as things fall in countries like that, they will be the ruling body or the ruling ethnic group. And they also have a lot of support from Iran, who is not supporting the insurgency there, because the insurgency is mostly based on the Sunnis. The Shiites are rule in Iran. So we could wind up losing either way. Even if we were to do a number on Iraq like the United States did on Korea, where it destroyed the entire country, destroyed every building south and north, killed about 1 million civilians, even if we did that and defeated the insurgents, then the Shiite government would be there, and it could very well just make an alliance with Iran.
Oh, yeah. And it's just, I don't know, like, no one really thinks about it. Everybody just, I don't know, you hear just the most asinine things from all these right-wingers, you know, saying, you know, that, you know, it's what needs to be done, you know, the Christian argument, of course, you know. Of course, none of them realize that, you know, all these religions are all descendants of Abraham and that they're the same religion, you know, so they're saying that they're all fundamentalist when they're fighting the same fight religiously, of course.
Well, none of them seem to be willing to join. A few do, but most of the really politically involved right-wing young people, they're keeping their ass out of the service and out of harm's way.
Oh yeah. I get. That's the same thing. Every time I get in an argument with somebody, you know, somebody my own age, I'll say, well, you know, you're going to sign up, right? You know, hell no, of course not. You know, and well, I mean, if they need me, then I'll go. And it's like, well, of course they need you. I mean, if it's your fight, I mean, they had more troops or they had more police officers technically guarding George Bush in New York than they had in the country of Afghanistan during his debate with Kerry.
Well, yeah, I mean, in fact, they do need them. None of the services, I think, maybe except for the Air Force, are even meeting their recruitment quotas. They're lowering the standards, and now they might offer as much, what was it? I think it's almost as much, 40 grand or something like that. I think I said put another 10 on it, I'd consider joining. All right, I got to move on, Tom. Thanks.
Thank you.
Appreciate it, yeah. Yeah, you know what they call Bush, Cheney, and all those guys that supported the Vietnam War but managed to scam out of it? Chicken hawks. In fact, we haven't talked about that much lately, but if you Google chicken hawks, you get some incredible information about these patriotic warriors. Here's Pat in Clinton Township. Pat, hi, it's Peter Werby.
Hey, Peter, what's happening?
How you doing?
I'm all right.
Good.
Well, I actually called to request some AC/DC, but I don't know. I forgot it was Night Talk.
Well, that's okay. You know, I was just listening a little earlier to some live AC/DC that we were playing. That was pretty
good. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, my buddy just got a tattoo of AC/DC on his shoulder.
Really?
Yeah, so he's a hardcore fan, so he's like, I want to hear some AC/DC. So I called up, and the guy's like, hey, you want to talk to Peter? I'm like, okay. I'm on the line for like a half an hour. I think I'm going to get AC/DC.
Well, why don't we try to get some on for you a little later after I go off?
That'd be cool.
All right. Thanks for calling us. We'll be right back.
This is WRIM.com.
Bill Bonds with the commercial. If you're near or farsighted and you want to throw away those glasses forever, I know a doctor you should see. Dr. Rescombati. Phone number 1-877. Then the letters U-S-E-E-M-O-R-E. 1-877, you see more. The equipment, the finest high-tech equipment ever made. Price $999 per eye. So don't fall for those $200 prices you hear being tossed around on the radio. Cows don't fly. Neither do those prices. Unless your daddy is an eye doctor and you're getting a freebie. Dr. S. Kambati, no doctor we know of has a better success rate. Procedure is fast, safe, cost $999 per eye. Virtually painless, you're in and out, maybe 40 minutes. Procedure itself, maybe 5. When it's over, you'll want to kiss your glasses goodbye and hug the doctor. Or maybe you guys will just want to give him a hi-fi, shake hands with him, walk away, and see a whole new world. See ya.
Every day, employers search for people skilled in today's technology. Are you ready for a change to a new career? Make a difference for yourself by calling the ITT Technical Institutes at 1-800-396-6622. Find out how an ITT Tech can help you prepare for a career in electronics, information technology, or drafting and design. Nationwide, thousands have launched technical careers after graduating from an ITT Tech. Classes meet just a few times a week to help you balance school and your job. Financial aid is available for those who qualify, and career assistance is available once you graduate. Now is your chance to make a difference for yourself, to start a new path to a career involving technology. Find out what an ITT Tech education can offer you. Call 1-800-396-6622 for an ITT Tech brochure. Classes are forming now, so call ITT Tech at 1-800-396-6622. That's 1-800-396-6622.
And now, a word from the Riff Legal Eagles. Unless otherwise stated, all entrants for WRIF contests must be at least 18 years of age and a legal resident of the United States. A household is eligible to win one contest per 30 days every 6 months for prizes valued at $600 or higher. Greater Media Detroit and its affiliates, promotional sponsors, advertising and promotional agencies, and other radio and television stations in the Detroit ADI are not eligible to participate. One entry per person. No purchase or other consideration is necessary to participate in a contest. Void where prohibited. Prizes are non-transferable or redeemable for cash. 101 WRIF reserves the right to substitute any prize for one of equal or greater value. By participating in the contest, contestants consent to the broadcast and or publication of their name, voice, face, and or likeness without compensation. Participants listening online at www.wrif.com may receive audio that is delayed by as much as 60 seconds later than the over-the-air transmission, which could potentially affect chances of winning. General contest rules are available online at www.wrif.com or during regular business hours at the WRIF Studios, 1 Radio Plaza, Detroit, Michigan, 48220.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
All right, thanks a lot. Welcome back to our final segment. At 1 a.m., we'll hear an interview with Boy, my brain gets foggy around this time of night, and I don't write things down. Anyways, an interview with somebody on the London bombing. Actually, a terrorism expert from Fourth Freedom. But you'll hear all that if you stay tuned. And then at 1:30 thereabouts, aid to Africa, the G8 conference in London, you know, all that Live Aid, all that stuff. CallTalkYes@yahoo.com is our email. Jeremy writes in from Windsor, Ontario. Comcast automatically deleting emails with www.afterdowningstreet.org in it. Wow. I mean, that's terrible. What that's about, afterdowningstreet.org. Downing Street memos, I was talking about this earlier. That is British memos showing that Bush, this is the concrete evidence that Bush lied about weapons of mass destruction and intended to lie, that they were fixing the intelligence around policy. I'm glad to get this as well. Melanie writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Says the next regularly scheduled meeting of the Huntington Woods Citizenship and Education Project will be Wednesday, July 20th, at the Huntington Woods Library. That's on Scotia, south of 11 Mile Road, at 6:45. A couple hours over there. And they have major projects like a petition drive and anti-recruitment efforts, stop the manner in which the armed services are recruiting in the schools. And they're essentially a peace group, although they don't have that in their title. And they do a lot of door-to-door work. They do a lot of, they're conferences, demonstrations. They are really an exemplary example of what I've talked about, how citizens, rather than just being out there as these atomized little fragments of society, group together in the way communities do and try to affect public policy. And they're doing great work. So check them out. In fact, let me see. I think they have a website, which isn't on here. But they're on my website. If you go to my website and then go to the Detroit calendar, you can hook up with them. pardon me. Christopher writes in, rumors I've come across on other websites suggest an underreporting of U.S. deaths as a result of the Iraq War. There we go. The rumors say that once the soldiers evacuate out of Iraq, if the latter end up dying, they're not listed among the death toll that is reported. Now, we've heard that there's more than, it says there's still 500-600 more U.S. dead than are reported. I've seen the stuff that it's as much as 5,000-7,000. Now, they always talk about killed in Iraq, but then doesn't anybody die from their injuries? So it strikes me that it probably a little more. 500-600 would make some sense. The thousands more, I think, has been debunked in a number of other places. All right, let's continue onwards. It's Adam from Mount Clemens. Adam, hi, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
How are you doing tonight, sir?
Doing good, thanks.
I just wanted to voice my opinion about some of the things I've heard tonight. I've heard from several people, you know, blasting the war in Iraq and then how we shouldn't be there, the things that we're doing wrong. But in my opinion, and I am a soldier, in my personal opinion, it's almost like these people that they say things, they make these half-hearted, you know, complaints about things, but then they never do anything. And that's why I enlisted, because I was tired of hearing people talk about what they would do, and if they were Bush, this is what they would do. And I got tired, so I enlisted, and I'm going to make a difference in the world, and I'm going to Iraq. So I know what I'm looking at. I know I'm staring death in the face, but it doesn't bother me because I know that what I'm doing is right. And I know my country.
You're not standing behind your country. You're standing behind Bush's policies that were based on a pack of lies.
Well, you know, that's all a matter of opinion.
Of course it is. But
it's all a matter of opinion. People can say this and say that.
But there is a difference. There is a difference beside you're defending your country or fighting for your country and saying you're fighting for the policies of an individual politician whose policies have been shown to be at least the majority of American people now think were erroneous at best.
Well, I see your point, let me make mine. It's that the fact is that whatever people want to say about the way Bush handled the situation, it's the fact of the matter is every single president faced with the same decision would have made the same outcome. So
why do you think that? Wait a minute. Why do you think? Now look, in my opinion, George, this is just an opinion. George Bush stole the election from Al Gore. All right? So, and rightly, Al Gore should have been the president in 2000. Now, why do you think Al Gore would have begun a war against Iraq as well?
No, because I personally think that Al Gore is a pansy, but that's just my opinion.
Well, you know, can I tell you something? That is so stupid to come out of your mouth that somebody is a pansy. That, in other words, I mean, even what that implies is bad enough, but that Gore is weak. So, but you said any president would have. So, what if for whatever reason Gore wouldn't have? So every president wouldn't have, right?
Faced with the same facts that Bush was faced with at the time.
Wait a minute. What facts was Bush faced with about Iraq?
Well, what is it, you know, the intelligence community said that the reports have been doctored, that people have said, hey, that this is what Bush was being told at the time, or people have said that this is what's been made up to be told to Bush at the time. Regardless of the fact, I think that Saddam Hussein was a problem. He had been needing to be taken care of ever since he came to power, and no one had done it, and finally Bush saw the opportunity.
Well, you know, your history is really distorted. First off, when he came to power, he came to power with the support of the United States government. He was armed. He was given intelligence, particularly during the 1980s by Reagan and Bush's father. He invaded Kuwait, and there's a lot of evidence to show that he, in fact, got the go-ahead from the Bush administration and then was too slow in getting out. But, I mean, he was a bad man. He was terrible. He was one of the many dictators that the United States has supported around the world, and there are some more dictators still that are getting taxpayer money and American military support. But what in 2003, what problem did, I'm sorry, in 2002, what problem did Saddam Hussein represent?
At that time, none.
But okay.
That's my point. He was actually, it's not what he presented the problem now, it's what problem he presents 5 to 10, 15 years down the road. It's the fact that the mentality of that man, and in the power he was in, he was there to do harm. I mean,
he wasn't there to do harm. In fact, there was never that wasn't one of the reasons. The reason was he represented an immediate, imminent threat. Bush talked about Saddam Hussein had ships filled with these pilotless drones that could be filled with chemical weapons and attack the United States directly. He also said he represented a direct threat to the region. Anybody with an ounce of brains, which I include myself and most of the listeners, knew that that was total BS. He had an army of dust. He had no weapons of mass destruction. I knew that, and I know that George Bush knew that.
Well, I think that some of the things that have been told are being fabricated by the liberals of the world to make this war seem as terrible as it can sound. You know, they make it sound like we're being slaughtered by the thousands every day over there.
No, we're just being slaughtered by the dozens.
We're being killed over there, but it's because the people over there are being the terrorism is a product of the insurgency and the former militants of Saddam Hussein. The people that are causing the trouble now are people who are—they're actually recruiting other people by means of violence. They're taking people's children hostage and telling them they have to go commit.
How do you know any of this? What makes you think any of this?
Well, sir, I can't tell you everything I know because I know some of the things I know because of the positions I'm in. But I'm saying,
I don't know. I don't buy that. All right, let's end this conversation. Good luck. Don't hurt anybody. And don't get hurt. Come back as you left. Thank you. Oh, man. Josh from Sterling Heights. Josh, hi. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. How's it going?
Going good.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that what the last guy was talking about, I definitely don't believe any of what's going on with Bush or anything. But I know for a while from what you've been saying and stuff, I have been scared shitless about a draft because I'm going to be 18 in a little less than 2 years. And I can just see that happening. And I just know that if that did come around, I'd want to sign up for the Marines to stop as many other people from going over there as possible. Because I'm thinking that's where I could go and do the most stuff to get this thing over with as quickly as possible to stop as many other people from going over there as possible.
Well, I don't know. They're not the army, and its strength is really eroding. But an attempt, particularly now when the war is so unpopular, the majority of people oppose it. The majority of people think that Bush went to war without for reasons that turned out to be wrong. But to put in a draft now, I mean, the country would go crazy. There would be the kind of draft resistance that you saw, like, during the Vietnam War, to some extent during World War One.
Yeah, I know, and I've heard plenty of that, but I don't know. I just have this feeling that if stuff went wrong, that could go about that, and it's just, I don't know. I just have a bad feeling about it, but if it did, that's where I want to go. But really what I wanted to talk to you about is, I know about an hour or so ago you were talking about abortion and whatnot, and someone was saying about making it illegal or whatnot. I remember back a few months ago in class, we were talking about abortion in class, and people had just different views, and what most of us actually agreed upon was, I'm not really for abortion myself, because I've been raised Catholic and everything, but been getting more into politics lately and everything, and just see how the political side is doing and whatnot. But we were thinking more of, if nothing would really happen if they made it illegal, like, it won't solve anything, like what you were saying, like having the police force people's theological opinions on others. But I think what might be a good idea, just because I find it, what everybody else says, what you say, that most conservatives say about it being killing someone because they have a heartbeat, I do kind of see that, just because that's how I've been raised, you know, and that's like how I've been raised.
Well, I mean, it's all right to have that opinion. I mean, that's okay. And usually what the freedom of choice movement says to the compulsory pregnancy people is, you don't like abortions? Don't have one. I mean, it's as simple as that. The people that think it's immoral or unethical or stopping a beating heart, all they got to do is not do it, and that makes it simple. I think there's only three countries in the whole hemisphere where abortion is legal: the United States, Canada, and Cuba. Every other country, which is dominated by the Catholic Church, it's illegal. Well, there's millions of abortions that take place in the countries where it's illegal. The only thing is, they don't have the proper medical, I mean, I don't know, they always don't, but when abortion is illegal, women still have them, but women have the abortion under the worst conditions rather than under the best conditions. So what we want is a society where every birth is one. First off, where birth control is available, I would say even for free, if we want to stop unwanted births, to people that are sexually active, no matter what their age, that we create a society that has enough economic and social justice that people don't want to not bring kids into the world because that they're a burden. Then you have a situation where children are welcome. I mean, as it is in this country, the majority of women that have abortions are married. All right. Actually, Josh, I got to take a bunch of calls real quickly. Thank you for yours. Good luck on your decisions. Ron from New Hudson. Hi. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. Go ahead.
Good evening, Peter. How are you?
Good. Thanks.
Good. Listen, I kind of imagined that you might have gone to a madras in the 60s, public school, whatever.
Yeah? What? Right? Yeah, yeah.
Well, they had recruiters showing us pictures of people popping caps and dudes kneeled down in the street in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
There's this Why Vietnam. I mean, the recruiters were there like every month, right?
Okay.
Like in 65. Because these people are really bad. They're fucking taking people and kneeling them down with their hands behind their back and popping them in the head. Well, when I was there in 67, the ComSat was doing the same thing to people they grabbed off the street while our MPs sat around in Jeeps with 50 caliber machine guns and let them do it. And it was like...
Tell me the point of this, though.
We were told a lie. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
In school, in our madrasas, in our public schools, and like in Livonia.
Mm-hmm.
They're showing us, the bad people, kneeling people down and shooting them in the back of the head. But then, when you're there, they're doing it. The ComSat, which were the white mice, the Vietnamese police, were doing it with basically us, keep protecting them.
Well,
and you know what? They're doing the same thing. They're trying to get people young kids, impressionable, to think that we are actually superior because we don't do this shit.
Well, I'm going to have to kind of pot you down here, Ron, because you're kind of letting loose with the language. But, there's this sense of morality. I mean, there was this thought that the communists, for instance, were these immoral people because of what they did. And the United States wound up killing 3 million North Indochinese civilians. In the same way here, we're saying how awful these insurgents are because they do these civilian bombings of these suicide bombings of civilians, and I think they are awful. But I also think it's awful that the United States Armed Forces killed between, depending on whose figures you look at, somewhere between 25,000 to 100,000 Iraqi civilians. So how does that fit in? I mean, I forgot what the total figure is of suicide bombings. It's like 1,000 or more or something like that. So they've killed 1,000 in this pretty awful manner. And the United States, over there with this moral high ground, has killed 25,000 to 100,000 civilians and destroyed the infrastructure of Iraq. What does that tell us? Here's Bob in Detroit. Bob, hi. It's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. Well, I won't be able to mention everything yet because I guess there isn't much time.
No.
But I would like to respond that the guy who wants to go over there, that guy who seemed rather confused, he wants to go over there and fight in Iraq. All I have to tell him is that it's an unconstitutional war because it's undeclared, and so by doing so, he's defecating all over our Constitution, and so he's no patriot. He's being anti-patriot. And like the guy from White Rose Society, I don't support him because what they're doing is wrong, and they should not have gone there, and they had the choice to do that. Now, I'd like to talk about this London thing. So far, it seems like almost every one of your guests believes this is a real story. I don't believe the way they're talking about it at all. Let's remember that early on they reported that Netanyahu, the Israeli, was given advanced warning through the Mossad about that bombing. Also remember, they've changed the story about how these bombs took place.
Wait, which bombing? What are we talking about
here? We're talking about the London bombs.
Really?
Now, what I'm telling you is that they also were doing a subway terror attack drill at the same time that these supposed bombs went off. Now, all this stuff is available on the net, and I'm very disturbed that people haven't raised this tonight. But there's every reason to believe that this is a phony deal, that this is phony terror, this is state-sponsored terror. People should understand the bulk of the terror that goes on in the planet is state-sponsored terror, and the three big sponsors of terror. There's lots of sponsors among states, but the three biggest are Britain, the United States, and Israel. Now, this is an inside job again. It's like the Spain job. When the facts came out, there was a clear indication that there was a tie-in to right-wingers in Spain and that Madrid bombing. One of the so-called terrorists actually had the phone number to a chief of police.
Well, listen, you're right. We're almost out of time. These are accusations that I'd like to see a lot of evidence on. Please, if you, I didn't, some of the stuff I haven't even heard of, I'd be glad to look at it. Just send it to me at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. All right, Bob, thank you very much. Got time for one more call. It's Thad from Chesterfield. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, what's up? First off, I want to give a shout-out to my soldier out there. What up? Anyways, there's a couple things I heard tonight that seem to be a little bit skewed, like the last caller who was talking about Netanyahu. He hasn't been prime minister of Israel for a little bit, I don't think.
Yeah, I was wondering about that myself.
Yeah. Anyways, that's non-relevant. You were talking earlier about how people make history, and when individuals force feed what they have to say or their point of view, mass populations, that ends up being negative.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, there's just one point I want to come. What happens if Lincoln didn't force feed, his point of view on our country, 100 years ago? Where are we then?
I know what you're saying, Thad, but that gets back to what I was talking about, that problems of long standing. I mean, why did the United States, which declared it was self for freedom, come in as a slave state and allow slavery to exist for that long? I mean, once things come to to certain points, I mean, it's like what I was saying about Iraq. I mean, once the United States has supported Saddam Hussein for so many years, and then suddenly he becomes a problem, well, you often don't have a very good answer or a very good solution. And unfortunately, I don't have time to let you even give an answer because I got to get out of here right now. Thank you for being our last caller, and I'm sorry to Craig and Sandy, but we got to get these commercials and then interviews on the air. So thanks for listening. Thanks for calling, and we'll talk again next week.
You're listening to WRIF.com. And now, a word from the Riff Legal Eagles. Unless otherwise stated, all entrants for WRIF contests must be at least 18 years of age and a legal resident of the United States. A household is eligible to win one contest per 30 days every 6 months for prizes valued at $600 or higher. Greater Media Detroit and its affiliates, promotional sponsors, advertising and promotional agencies, and other radio and television stations in the Detroit ADI are not eligible to participate. One entry per person. No purchase or other consideration is necessary to participate in the contest. Void where prohibited. Prizes are non-transferable or redeemable for cash. 101 WRIF reserves the right to substitute any prize for one of equal or greater value. By participating in the contest, contestants consent to the broadcast and or publication of their name, voice, face, and or likeness without compensation. Participants listening online at www.wrif.com may receive audio that is delayed by as much as 60 seconds later than the over-the-air transmission, which could potentially affect chances of winning. General contest rules are available online at www.wrif.com or during regular business hours at the WRIF Studios, 1 Radio Plaza, Detroit, Michigan, 48220.
Every day, employers search for people skilled in today's technology. Are you ready for a change to a new career? Make a difference for yourself by calling the ITT Technical Institutes at 1-800-396-6622. Find out how an ITT Tech can help you prepare for a career in electronics, information technology, or drafting and design. Nationwide, thousands have launched technical careers after graduating from an ITT Tech. Classes meet just a few times a week to help you balance school and your job. Financial aid is available for those who qualify, and career assistance is available once you graduate. Now is your chance to make a difference for yourself, to start a new path to a career involving technology. Find out what an ITT Tech education can offer you. Call 1-800-396-6622 for an ITT Tech brochure. Classes are forming now, so call ITT Tech at 1-800-396-6622. That's 1-800-396-6622.
Hey, Tigers fans, this summer, why sit at home when you could sit at home? Wait, that is. Now is a great time to catch all the fun and excitement happening at every Detroit Tigers home game. You'll see plenty of homers by Pudge Rodriguez, Dimitri Young, Carlos Guillen, and all your favorite players. But a trip to Comerica Park means more than just baseball. While the Tigers are driving home runs, you could drive home in a brand new car during the Chevy Cobalt Drive One Home Giveaway, sponsored by your Detroit area Chevy dealers. Just buy a ticket to select Friday or Saturday night home games, and you could drive one out of here. Looking for a surefire hit? Hey, don't miss Friday and Saturday night fireworks, sponsored by Pepsi and Verizon Wireless. And with a weekend value pack, that's four tickets, four hot dogs, and four Pepsis for just $59. And you'll want to bring everyone from home. So for great giveaways like autographed balls, bobbleheads, collector cards, and jerseys, and for great baseball, this summer, catch a Tigers game. For tickets, call 248-25-TIGER or visit DetroitTigers.com and make Comerica Park your home away from home game.
Every Tuesday, get double shots of the best riff rock.
The way you want it.
See, I told you there was a rational explanation.
Tuesday on 101 WRIF. Riff Rocks.
This is WRIF.com.
we're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. A sad day last week, almost now the week before, when the bombs went off in the London subway system and on that bus and brought the horror of terrorism, something experienced regularly in Iraq and in Palestine, Israel, quite frequently. But when it comes home, it's even more shocking. Joining me is Alistair Miller, and he is Vice President and Director of the Washington, D.C. office of the Fourth Freedom Forum. He's also Director of the Counterterrorism Evaluation Project, and it's co-sponsored by the Fourth Freedom Forum and the Joan B. Kroc Institute for International Peace Studies at the University of Notre Dame. Alistair Miller is joining me from Washington, D.C. Thank you very much for being on the Peter Werby Show.
My pleasure, Peter.
As I mentioned this when we first talked off the air, I said from the sound of your voice, this is probably even more, hits home even more so than the rest of us. You're from England, I take it?
I am. I'm British born. I was born in Chester, England. And I've lived in Washington, D.C. since 1996. I have friends and family all over Britain and particularly in London.
Hmm. Now, you have these formal positions, but as a human being, this must have had a pretty dramatic impact on you learning about these bombings.
It certainly did, and it made me understand, I think, more clearly how the way this has been reported in the press since 9/11 is really sort of too generalized and overlooks the fact that there has been networks established, particularly in Europe, that try to recruit a sort of homegrown, native-born terrorist sects. And this is something that has been overlooked, particularly with the rhetoric that we've been hearing from the Bush administration in particular about this being, you know, a problem of the Middle East and Iraq and trying to make that link with terrorism, when actually what you're seeing is a far more sort of franchise network using Al-Qaeda as a name and a concept, but to develop homegrown attacks that is really quite frightening if you consider these people who... Now there's four or five of them that have been caught by British authorities are British-born.
Mm-hmm. Actually, and I want to explore what you just said even more so, Alistair Miller, but I was concerned at how it hit you as a person, knowing people there, having family in England, wondering, was this the kind of thing you went immediately to the phone to make sure that everyone was all right?
I sure did, and my attempts to reach my friends and family on cell phone, which is the way most people communicate regularly in Britain and in the rest of Europe, mainly due to the high landline rates that they pay. Those attempts were futile because the network had been shut down and large widths of the band used for cell phones was devoted to emergency services. So then I resorted to email and calling people outside London, and just had one friend who decided not to board the train that in fact was hit in Liverpool Street. The crowds were too long at the station that day, and he thought something was suspicious, so he left. So luckily he was okay, but I really feel for the families who are grieving and those who have severely injured members who were caught up in this this atrocious act.
You know, there is a lot been in the U.S. press. I haven't seen much of the British press about it. About the sort of what's come to be called the stiff upper lip of the British people, that they have this history of surviving IRA bombings and certainly the Nazi terror bombings of World War II. But I can't imagine that gets people ready or used to or being able to cope any better with when something like this occurs.
No, I don't think it does either, and I think that the reality of the fact is if anyone spent any time in London or any major city which relies on public transportation as a means to get around, you just can't exist and you can't work and you can't do anything without relying on that public transportation. So what I see, in fact, as the sort of the essence of this resilience is just brought about by the need to just get on with your life. You can't just move house and move out of London if you have a job and a family and a house there. So it's really more of a fact of just having to rely on the networks, transportation networks that were targeted. They have no other choice.
Mm-hmm. You may have seen this, and you talk about, or I was, about how this happens regularly in Iraq. I saw this this little, I don't know, almost just a little aphorism saying that in Iraq they call this Sunday. In other words, this happens every single day. And in fact, last Sunday, 50 people were killed by bombers that day.
Yeah, just let me give you a statistic, an appalling reminder of how bad things are in Iraq. The U.S. military spokesperson in Iraq said just a couple of days ago that the average amount of insurgent attacks countrywide are 71 per day. Of course, we only get those that are highlighted with the most injuries, usually around the Baghdad and Sunni Triangle area. And in the month of May, we had a number of Iraqis, over 500 killed, and about 70 or so U.S. personnel and non-military people killed just in that month. So, yeah, this is just an average day in Iraq, Sunday, as you say.
Alistair Miller is my guest on the Peter Werbe Show. He's the vice president and director of the Washington, D.C. office of the Fourth Freedom Forum and also director of the Counterterrorism Evaluation Project. Tell us, Alistair, if you would, what the Fourth Freedom Forum is and what the Counterterrorism Evaluation Project is.
Gladly. The Fourth Freedom Forum was established in 1982 by a private businessman in Goshen, Indiana. He did business, agribusiness, chicken coops and things like that all over the world. He had offices in China, colleagues in Russia, offices in Latin America and in Europe. And he noticed during the throes of the Cold War that there was all sorts of rhetoric flying between Moscow and Washington and no effort to use trade, the power to give and the power to withhold trade, to try and influence behavior and statecraft. And he particularly was interested in the apartheid movement and the boycotts that were established in the early 1980s as a way to use other tools of statecraft rather than resort to war to solve conflicts. And we've developed that over time with the application of using targeted sanctions, going after individuals by cutting their money off rather than blanket sanctions or going to war that affects innocent civilians. And it's many of those tools that were applied to sanctions in the 1990s that are now being applied to what I call more effective non-military measures for countering terrorism, that is freezing financial assets, arms embargoes, international police cooperation, and those sorts of things. And that's really what my organization, both the Fourth Freedom Forum and this Counterterrorism Evaluation Project with the University of Notre Dame, aims to do. We work with various different governments and the UN itself to try and establish these more effective non-military tools to deal with terrorism. And this is why it's so astounding to me to see President Bush continue to call this a war and to increase the vigor for an approach militarily that just does not seem to be working.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned working with governments. Do you have any ability to connect with the Bush government?
Well, we do actually quite closely primarily through the ambassador's office up at the UN, the UN mission, the U.S. mission to the UN. We've got a lot of folks who are, of course, very interested in increasing cooperation within the UN. And the sad reality is that there are a lot of people here in Washington, in the State Department, and particularly in the Pentagon, who seem more enamored with an approach that is sort of using a blunt tool and is more unilateral, go it alone, if you will. And there's a real sort of tension and conflict in my mind between what is being done cooperatively and very well by the folks up at the UN on the U.S.'s behalf and that of the folks in Washington.
Mm-hmm. Well, how would you answer the argument put forth by people like Dick Cheney and Karl Rove, the embattled advisor to George Bush, that kind of soft, mushy approach that you just, and I put that in quotes, and that you just enunciated, Alistair Miller, towards terrorism, people that mean the destruction of this country, whereas as they even identified, but Karl Rove did, conservatives were there, took the war right to the where the terrorists were and are, and aren't going to let kind of these soft responses prevail.
Well, my reaction would be that we're getting what is repeatedly seen in, as a hollow claim by the Bush administration that the taking the fight to them has helped to protect us on our homeland. And it's clear from the attacks in Britain and in Spain in particular that it was the actions of those so-called allied governments in concert with the U.S. and Iraq that has only helped to fan the flames of terrorism and increase the attacks. And if you saw the message of claim of responsibility after the London attacks by a special group or let's say sect of Al-Qaeda, they'd link this directly to the U.S. presence in Iraq. So I my response to that is that Rove, who likes to say that, you know, the savagery of 9/11 and preparing indictments and offering therapy to understanding our attackers is what the liberals want to do, and we, conservatives feel a tougher approach is necessary, i.e. with the war in Iraq, are actually fanning the flames and creating more of a problem than they are supposed to be diverting and averting.
You're the, as we just mentioned, the director of the Counterterrorism Evaluation Project. It sometimes seems to me that, other than a lot of diligent police work, that's all, about all you can do. I mean, I think of Israel, who has suffered from terrorist attacks, and it has probably the best intelligence system in the world in terms of keeping track of people that mean to do destruction to them. It has this intense security system, and it also has a punitive apparatus that sometimes goes way beyond actually punishing the person that did that. And yet still, as we just saw the other day, they can't stop terror bombings. I mean, it almost seems, what do they say, about the weather. Everybody talks about it, but there's nothing you can do about it.
Well, I think there is something that can be done about it. And if you look at Israel in particular and the Middle East in the wider regional context, you see that the tactical approach that have been taken, often sometimes producing short-term victories in interdicting suicide bombers and tearing down people's houses and things like that, really only creates and sows the seeds for further resentment that breeds tomorrow's terrorists. So I think that you need, yes, to have this very sophisticated intelligence sharing apparatus and everything else, but if you take a very heavy-handed approach, you only just sort of cut off your nose to spite your face and create a situation where it just breeds, becomes a recruiting poster, if you will, for future terrorists. And I think the way to deal with the problem in the Middle East is to try to get people from both sides together in the Palestinian territories and in Israel to increase a dialogue. And let's not forget, we referenced the IRA in Ireland earlier in our conversation. It was 25 years of tit-for-tat terrorism and police action in Ulster and Northern Ireland that really had no end in sight and led to bombings on British territories and other things. And it was only after a channel was opened up with the political wing of the IRA, Sinn Féin, that we were able to bring an end to this conflict. And now you have members of Sinn Féin in the Irish Parliament. And let's not forget also, a regional approach was taken where the EU came in and tried to develop economic stability and give people a real stake. That same sort of stuff has to happen in the Middle East, where Palestinians and Israelis can coexist, develop trading partnerships, and begin to talk to each other. I think that the Ariel Sharon's approach in getting people out of the settlements is a good start, but he's still using a very, very heavy-handed neocon approach that is fanning the flames of terrorism elsewhere in the region.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned particularly as the enunciated basis of the attack on Spain and on Britain in the transportation systems that directly connected to the government support of the U.S. invasion of the of Iraq.
Yeah.
And I think that probably getting out of there would go a long ways towards solving the intense anger that so many people feel against the United States around the world. The argument there is, though, that we would be surrendering to terrorism.
I just don't buy that argument at all. I think that the connection between the Iraq war and terrorism in the first instance was forced and has been seen now to be really just not true, connecting 9/11 and Iraq, for example, when the WMD argument seemed to fall on its face, is just an example of the Bush administration boxing itself in with its own syntax. When I really think that the issue of the wider war on terrorism, I prefer to call it a struggle or a vigilance rather than a war. It's like a war on drugs or a war on poverty. It's just something that is impossible to ever see a victory day come about. And I also would like to point out that many people, critics of my argument, that say, well, hey, what about 9/11? That happened before the war in Iraq. Yes, this is true, but if you look at the statements of bin Laden and the perpetrators of the attacks, they had long-standing grievances about the fact that U.S. bases and other things were in the Arabian Peninsula and the first Gulf War. So one has to look at sort of these wider problems, including the Israeli and Palestinian conflict, to see really where the underlying grievances and where the problem is, and try to address those wider problems, attacking terrorism at its roots, if you will, combining that with a strategy to increase cooperation and intelligence sharing, and if need be, I'm afraid in some cases, the use of these closed-circuit televisions and other things, but in a manner that isn't intrusive on people's civil liberties, and too draconian, like we've seen, for example, with some of the parts of the Patriot Act in this mm-hmm. country.
Alistair Miller is my guest on the Peter Werby Show. He's Vice President and Director of the Washington, D.C. Office of the Fourth Freedom Forum. You can go to fourthfreedom.org, fourthfreedom.org. He's also a musician. You can hear him playing some instrument there. I know. And also there'll be a link to all of this on my website at peterwerby.com. Remind people about the origins of the name of your organization.
Yes, the Fourth Freedom Forum comes from a reference to four freedoms articulated by Franklin Delano Roosevelt in a speech that he gave to Congress in January of 1941. And he essentially said the freedom from want, freedom of the press, and freedom of religion, and then for the fourth one, freedom from fear, were really what the world needed to strive towards with the establishment after the Second World War. This was his goal at the time, of a multilateral system to prevent war. And freedom from fear, in the context that my organization has followed that term through, is really to prevent fear from weapons of mass destruction, terrorism, and other things that can be solved without resort to war, which we believe only intensifies fear amongst people.
Well, let's do. Put the cart before the horse, which is okay, because we started talking about solutions. In other words, settle people's grievances so they're not the incubator for more terrorist activity among angry and powerless people. But let's go back to what you began this talk with, and that is the threat. And you mentioned about franchised terrorist groups, and that how increasingly it looks like people that have been in a country like Britain, as it turns out, the suicide bombers were British citizens born in Britain, lived in Leeds. A couple of them even kind of were just high, looked like they were high rollers till they suddenly got religion, and their religiosity expressed themselves in a terrible and destructive manner. I mean, you get this feeling, of course, and that's what we mentioned about freedom from fear, that all of us are at risk at any moment.
You do get that feeling, and I think this is the crux of what terrorists are trying to do. They're trying to sow panic and fear into everyone at all times. But I think it's worth closely looking at the type of circumstances and issues surrounding the growth of these terrorists who attacked London just last week. What you see is, in fact, not groups that are of people who are enamored with orthodox Muslim religious attitudes, long beards, and oft repeated recitations of the Quran. It's more people who give the bombers a sense that they're doing this for a wider, what they call a caliphate, or a world sort of Muslim brotherhood that can help solve the problems of their brothers and sisters in the Middle East and South Asia. So what I think needs to be done, and I think Tony Blair's doing it in the right way at the moment, is to try and get the non-radical Muslim leaders together and try to encourage them to work on a path that tries to assimilate people and bring people into a sort of stakeholding position within society in Britain, so they don't feel that they're, yes, in Britain, but working for a wider sort of destructive, almost pan-Muslim movement that is really just a figment of of their imagination. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I think the only way to start to prevent this fear is to try to encourage those in the sort of sensible center, if you will, to do more to rein in those who might be attracted by radicalism. And I believe that this is a big mistake that President Bush made after 9/11, was, yes, he did go to some Muslim services and what have you, but there were a lot of folks in the Middle East and elsewhere connected with terrorism, North Africa, who've all been educated in the United States. They have a strong connection with the United States, and we did nothing tangible to try and bring those people over to our side. The inflammatory rhetoric only tended to make people more radical if they had beliefs that they were suspicious of the United States activities in the Middle East, favoring Israel and all that sort of stuff.
Now, how should we view the perpetrators of these deeds? Obviously, they've committed a heinous crime. I can't see any justification ever of attacks on civilians, whether it's men in uniforms or men without uniforms. I always say, if you kill civilians, or rather, if you kill women and children and you're in civilian clothes, you're a terrorist. If you kill them and you have a uniform on, you're in the army. And yet, at the end of the day, you have dead civilians, none of which to me is an acceptable situation.
Absolutely.
But Bush refers to these people as thugs and killers. Yet, as you just were at least sort of beginning to indicate, they see themselves as part of a world transformative process, that they have high ideals, that they, I mean, everybody has justifications for mass killings, but it's not thuggery or just murderous brutes, or is it?
Well, I think it's just a subject of or a matter of interpretation, and if you just go back to what President Bush said in the immediate aftermath of the attacks in London last week, he was at the G8 summit, and I don't know if you recall, but he said, you know, it astounds me that we have two such different sets of people here. We've got me and the other leaders in the G8 working to solve poverty and AIDS and other problems in Africa and, you know, doing good things. And then you've got other people who want to destroy all of those good things and kill innocent people. And it just made me think that right or wrong, and absolutely wrong in the case of the terrorism that occurred in London, you will have an audience to those kind of remarks from Bush in the Middle East and other places that think, hey, wait a minute, aren't you doing that to us in Iraq? Aren't innocent people being killed every day? Wasn't the justification for that one that was sort of, you know, world democracy and all these other things? But really, at the end of the day, the evidence that was needed to go in and get the support for the UN for an international action against Saddam Hussein and to attack Iraq and kill innocent people was fabricated, and it wasn't in their minds justified. So it just, I think, inflames and really heightens people's sense of injustice and a double standard. And I think President Bush needs to take a cue from Tony Blair. And I don't say this just because I'm British, but I think he was far more careful in choosing his words and not making it seem like we are good and you are, all of you Muslim or Middle Eastern people are evil. Because that's the perception, I'm afraid, that is being sown.
Mm-hmm. Just a couple of minutes left with Alistair Miller. I ask you this, I mean, and I don't know if it's even possible to discern this as director of the Counterterrorism Evaluation Project. The people that are identified as insurgents or terrorists, and in fact, I know that's begun to be the terrorists, is the way that, again, that Bush and his government is beginning to portray the insurgents. What would happen if the U.S. left precipitously? I mean, in Vietnam, of course, they said we can't leave because there would be a bloodbath. Well, there was a bloodbath because the United States stayed there. Is there a similar situation? Would things worsen if the United States just pulled out immediately?
I don't think they could pull out immediately, just logistically anyway. And I think that one has to be very careful not to get drawn into an argument that's perhaps being made by some folks up on the Hill that, you know, if we move and pull our troops out of there, that we'll be out of there. Let's not forget this massive footprint with the green zone in Iraq that's still going to inflame, the sort of reaction that we're seeing around the world. But I do believe, and it wouldn't be an immediate withdrawal, but if a withdrawal was taking place and some sort of timetable was in effect, not an exact date, but just a sort of logistical one to get those Iraqi troops on the ground, train themselves, and get the U.S. out, let's say even over a period of a year and a half or 2 years, I think that would go a long way to sort of reducing the negative effects that we're seeing both in Iraq every day, but outside, hailing and connecting that to the U.S. presence in Iraq.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being with me. Alistair Miller is the Vice President and Director of the Washington, D.C. Office of the Fourth Freedom Forum. You can go to fourthfreedom.org and find out more information about the group's activity. Also, my website, peterwerby.com, will have a link as well. Alistair Miller, thanks for joining me.
Thanks so much, Peter.
You're listening to WRIF.com. And now, a word from the Riff Legal Eagles. Unless otherwise stated, all entrants for WRIF contests must be at least 18 years of age and a legal resident of the United States. A household is eligible to win one contest per 30 days every 6 months for prizes valued at $600 or higher. Greater Media Detroit and its affiliates, promotional sponsors, advertising and promotional agencies, and other radio and television stations in the Detroit ADI are not eligible to participate. One entry per person. No purchase or other consideration is necessary to participate in the contest. Void where prohibited. Prizes are not transferable or redeemable for cash. 101 WRIF reserves the right to substitute any prize for one of equal or greater value. By participating in the contest, contestants consent to the broadcast and or publication of their name, voice, face, and or likeness without compensation. Participants listening online at www.wrif.com may receive audio that is delayed by as much as 60 seconds later than the over-the-air transmission, which could potentially affect chances of winning. General contest rules are available online at www.wrif.com or during regular business hours at the WRIF Studios, 1 Radio Plaza, Detroit, Michigan, 48220.
Bill Bonds with a commercial. If you're near or farsighted and you want to throw away those glasses forever, I know a doctor you should see. Dr. Escombati. Phone number 1-877. Then the letters U-S-E-E-M-O-R-E. 1-877-UC-MORE. The equipment, the finest high-tech equipment ever made. Price $999 per eye. So don't fall for those $200 prices you hear being tossed around on the radio. Cows don't fly. Neither do those prices, unless your daddy is an eye doctor and you're getting a freebie. Dr. S. Combati, no doctor we know of has a better success rate. Procedure is fast, safe, cost $999 per eye. Virtually painless, you're in and out, maybe 40 minutes. Procedure itself, maybe 5. When it's over, you'll want to kiss your glasses goodbye and hug the doctor. Or maybe you guys will just want to give him a high-five. Shake hands with them, walk away, and see a whole new world. See ya.
Anglers, get ready to cast your line for big money. The OSI Pro Series WRIF Great Lakes Fishing Championship Series is underway, and there's still time to enter to win the $1,500 Series Championship. Sign up now for the Bass Championship going out of Lake Erie Metro Park on July 30th. Slots will fill up fast, so get your entry in now. Compete for thousands of dollars in cash and prizes, including the DMF Bait Award for the kid under 16 landing the largest fish on live bait. It's all going to be given away to the best fishing team in town, so sign up now by calling 248-591-6841 or go to WRIF.com for an entry form. There will be fun for everyone at the post-event party at Big Al Sports Grill, so call 248-591-6841 to become the OSI Pro Series WRIF Great Lakes Fishing Series Champion. Call 248-591-6841 today. Brought to you by OSI Pro Series, the DMF Bait Company, Big Al Sports Grill, and 101 WRIF.
Every day, employers search for people skilled in today's technology. Are you ready for a change to a new career? Make a difference for yourself by calling the ITT Technical Institute at 1-800-396-6622. Find out how an ITT tech can help you prepare for a career in electronics, information technology, or drafting and design. Nationwide, thousands have launched technical careers after graduating from an ITT tech. Classes meet just a few times a week to help you balance school and your job. Financial aid is available for those who qualify, and career assistance is available once you graduate. Now is your chance to make a difference for yourself, to start a new path to a career involving technology. Find out what an ITT Tech education can offer you. Call 1-800-396-6622 for an ITT Tech brochure. Classes are forming now, so call ITT Tech at 1-800-396-6622. That's 1-800-396-6622.
Hey, Tigers fans, this summer, why sit at home when you could sit at home? Wait, that is. Now is a great time to catch all the fun and excitement happening at
every Detroit Tigers home game. You'll see plenty of homers by Pudge Rodriguez, Dimitri Young, Carlos Guillen, and all your favorite players. But a trip to Comerica Park means more than just baseball. While the Tigers are driving home runs, you could drive home in a brand new car during the Chevy Cobalt Drive One Home Giveaway, sponsored by your Detroit area Chevy dealers. Just buy a ticket to select Friday or Saturday night home games, and you could drive one out of here. Looking for a surefire hit? Hey, don't miss Friday and Saturday night fireworks, sponsored by Pepsi and Verizon Wireless. And with a weekend value pack, that's four tickets, four hot dogs, and four Pepsis for just $59. Hey, you'll want to bring everyone from home. So for great giveaways like autographed balls, bobbleheads, collector cards, and jerseys, and for great baseball, this summer, catch a Tigers game. For tickets, call 248-25-TIGER or visit DetroitTigers.com and make Comerica Park your home away from home game.
Every Tuesday, get double shots of the best riff rock.
The way you want it.
Rock. See, I told you there was a rational explanation.
Super Tuesday on 101 WRIF.
Riff Rock.
This is WRIF.com.
Thank you very much
this
for joining
is
me.
Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this.
Thank you very much for joining me. Africa has really come to the fore in terms of a political issue, a social issue, and a humanitarian issue. And we've seen Live Aid, David Geffen, Bono, lots of other people raising consciousness, raising money all across the world. The G8 meeting in Gleneagles, Scotland just happened. And I want to get an evaluation of that from Bill Fletcher. He's president of the Trans-Africa Forum, and he looks at these issues. Bill Fletcher, welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Thank you so much for having me on.
And Bill Fletcher is in Washington, D.C. One barely knows where to start. It's a continent of misery, of untold proportions, isn't it?
It's a continent of misery, but it's a continent of promise. It's a continent that is the origin of human life on this planet. And it's a continent that needs to be taken much more seriously and understood better, particularly by those of us in the United States who are largely ignorant of the continent, of its dimensions, and of the challenges that face it.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it'd be worth just at least briefly addressing, how did it get to be in the shape that it was? I mean, at one point, it was a continent of riches. Now
That's
it's
right.
The poorest nation in the world, everything from slavery to civil wars to AIDS epidemics, pandemic, really. How did it arrive at such an awful point?
Well, the short answer, and actually there is no real short answer, but it has to begin with the slave trade and the fact that the slave trade more or less coincided with the decline of the largest of the empires that were in Central and Northern Africa. And so the slave trade resulted in the depopulation of the continent and the corresponding demoralization. That was then followed by colonization. and Africa was divided up like a piece of cherry pie.
Mm-hmm.
The colonization lasting into the 1950s and ultimately to the 1970s then evolved into independent nations, but according to borders that had been created by Europeans. Now, this presented...
Yeah, give us an example of that. I mean, I think that's very interesting.
Okay.
Iraq, for instance, was in the Middle East. That's one example. But in Africa, give us an idea of that.
No, I'm glad you mentioned Iraq, because there's a very interesting parallel with the creation of Iraq and the creation of Kuwait,
mm-hmm.
Which is a completely artificial state. An example that I like to reference is the countries of Nigeria and Niger in West Africa. In northern Nigeria, there's a ethnic group called the Hausa. In southern Niger, there's the same group, the Hausa, and they're divided by an artificial boundary. That boundary was not created by the Hausa themselves. It was created by the French and the British when they partitioned Africa. So the final, the countries, the independent countries, kept those boundaries, but those boundaries, as I mentioned, run through ethnic groups. They often group ethnic groups together that had no historical relationship, or in some of the most bizarre circumstances known to humanity, you have in East Africa, in Rwanda and Burundi, the creation of a tribe that didn't exist, that meaning the Tutsis.
Mm-hmm.
The Tutsis had not existed until the Belgians came and occupied the country. And they picked the lighter-skinned, taller, thinner-nosed people who were all Hutus, and it created them as a Tutsi. So you end up having the situation that has gone down through the decades. And then when the countries become independent, they, by and large, lacked the kind of infrastructure necessary for real self-sufficiency. The exception really being South Africa, which was a very particular case because of the apartheid regime.
Now, I was just reading the New York Times today. You may have seen it, an op-ed piece that's saying they mentioned none of what you said before and didn't mention anything about the structural problems, economic problems, anything like that. They said it was all the result of the bad leadership, the dictatorships that rule
right.
in Africa, and essentially saying that it was a political problem, and that if there was democracy in all these countries and these corrupt dictatorships were gone, everything would be fine. Is there truth to that in your estimation?
Well, there is truth to it, but the truth is actually much more complicated than that slogan. In other words, there is a fight for democracy underway in Africa. There's no question about that. But what we often in the United States want to ignore is the fact that many of the dictatorships were supported either by the United States or by Western Europe when it was convenient, particularly during the Cold War. Now, one of the grossest examples is that of Mobutu in what's now the Congo, which he rechristened Zaire after he took it over. And the situation was so egregious. I mean, here was someone that they've actually created a name for his kind of regime. They call it a kleptocracy. Because he stole from his own people, becoming one of the wealthiest people on the planet. As long as the Cold War was underway, and as long as Mobutu was a trusted ally of the United States, nothing was said about his corruption. He was allowed to pillage his people, pillage anyone, and nothing was said. He was a proxy in the Angolan War in 1975 for the United States. And yet nothing is said. Now all of a sudden, you know, people like the Heritage Foundation and others are wringing their hands talking about corruption and bad governance when they're not taking any responsibility for the situation that we find ourselves in. And it's obviously not only the United States. I mean, there really is this collaboration, a regular rogues gallery of the United States and several countries in Western Europe that had played an incredibly destructive role. I mean, the United States helped to destroy both the Congo and Angola. And yet there's no sense of accountability from our leadership.
Bill Fletcher is my guest. He's president of Trans-Africa Forum. Bill Fletcher, tell us, what's Trans-Africa Forum?
Trans-Africa Forum is a U.S.-based, we're here in Washington, D.C., education and advocacy organization formed to raise awareness in the U.S. about issues facing the nations and peoples of Africa, the Caribbean, and Latin America. And our major focus is on the implications for U.S. foreign policy.
Okay. At the beginning of the show, I guess I was asking for you to give a list of the problems of Africa, and you answered with saying that it had a lot of promise. Perhaps the list of problems isn't necessary because it's so well known, but let's talk some about the promise. And are we arriving at a situation now where there's public consciousness about it through things like Live Aid, and also the nations that have historically benefited from looting Africa, both of people in the 17th, 18th, and 19th century, and through imperialism and colonialism also benefited, that they're finally looking at a way to perhaps alleviate some of these problems?
Well, there is and there is not growing consciousness. There's part of what I was concerned about with the Live Aid concerts, and I don't raise this in order to smear them in any way. I think it's important to raise awareness. The problem is raising awareness really needs to be linked to a social movement that goes from just awareness to actually challenging the policymakers to do something different. I mean, when you were talking in the beginning about the problems, I mean, obviously the civil wars, famine, poverty, HIV, AIDS, et cetera, but you have now also, or in the alternative, the formation of the African Union, an attempt at building continental unity. And I think that this is critically important, that the continent, the day of the small nations is basically gone. It's much, much harder in a post-Cold War world to operate as a small nation. During the Cold War, some small nations were able to play off of the two superpowers, as well as some of the other powers, and survive. In this situation that we're currently in, much, much harder. So that's why regional blocs or continental unity for Africa and Latin America particularly becomes so critically important. And I think it's that if the United States really wishes to help Africa, it will seek to partner with the African Union and engage in a discussion with the African Union about the forms of assistance that are needed. So, in other words, it's not just dumping assistance onto Africa. It is working with the governments to try to figure out, because mostly what the governments are talking about are either better trade relations or assistance that's targeted at infrastructure development or redevelopment. And I'll give you an example.
Sure.
Railroads. The railroads that were constructed in the colonial era were not constructed for the purpose of helping the people in those countries or then colonies get along or get around. They weren't constructed to strengthen the infrastructure. They were constructed for the purpose mainly of facilitating the extraction of natural resources.
Mm-hmm. What I called looting.
Exactly.
Before, yeah.
No, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
And so the railroads would then tend to go from the interior to the coast. So it doesn't help in terms of inner colony or now inner country transportation. The railroads are built to service needs that the people don't have. So Africa needs new railroads. It needs new highways. It needs electrification. It needs clean drinking water, public education, and public health. I mean, this is where the kind of assistance that many of us are talking about would really make a difference. It's something along the lines of, the post-World War II Marshall Plan in Europe. I mean, that level of development.
Well, other than an ethical sense that this ought to be repaid, the damage done should be fixed, a listener might be listening to our conversation and think, hey, you know, that's their problem. We've got problems right here in Michigan. We've got schools closing in Detroit. We've got a rail system that sucks here in the United States. Why should we be taking taxpayer dollars and sending it over to another continent?
Well, you know, there's a few different answers I would give to that. One is that when you break something, you got to repair it. And what I'm talking about is not charity, but repairing. That when the United States played a significant role in destroying Angola and the Congo, then we have to repair the damage. You know, it's like if I went into your house and I destroyed all of your furniture and painted graffiti on your walls, took your food and your savings, and then walked out, you would not accept an apology from me. You would not accept that I walked on and said, oh, yeah, well, I did that at one point, but now why should we pay attention to that at this juncture? You would quite correctly and justly say, I want the damage repaired.
Sure.
So that's basically what we have to understand. When the United States helped to prolong, for example, the Portuguese occupation of several colonies, when, in fact, Portuguese colonialism probably would have collapsed in the early 1960s, we did damage. The damage needs to be repaired.
Oh, Bill Fletcher, you're talking about justice, something I believe very strongly in.
Right.
That doesn't wash with everybody, or should we just move on from those people that don't accept a basic concept of human justice?
Well, it depends on whether you want people flying airplanes in the building.
Yeah, there you go. This is what I'm looking for.
Right?
Go ahead.
I mean, that's really what I mean, and I'm not justifying the Al-Qaeda.
No, of course not.
I look at them as fascists. But I'm saying to you that people get angry, and if people feel that their issues are being ignored, they will take steps that we may not like, and in fact may not be just, but reflect the fury that they're feeling. So we have to say, okay, I don't particularly have any interest in seeing any more planes fly into buildings. I don't want to see kids blown up. I think we have to understand that there are ramifications of our foreign policies. And we in the United States, unfortunately, all too often, and this might take us into another interview, but we unfortunately act as if we as individuals don't or didn't know about something, then we have no obligation to do anything to correct the injustice.
Hmm.
And I think that's what gets us into trouble around the world.
Well, sure. Noam Chomsky calls that, on one hand, willful ignorance. I mean, the
right.
Information is out there. Your organization, Bill Fletcher, Trans-Africa Forum, is good source of information. You can go to transafricaforum.org, by the way, and also on my website, peterwerby.com, there will be a link for sure. The slogan of social activists during the 1990s, which was no justice, no peace, and it sounded sort of, people took it sometimes is a threat, but it's really a reality. If there's not economic and social justice around the world, the mess that keeps arising in one form or another, and previously hadn't visited the Western countries very much, but now is starting to, it's going to continue.
I mean, that's absolutely the case. It's absolutely the case, and I think that you're right. The idea of no justice, no peace, on the one hand, is a threat. On the other hand, it is a statement of what will happen. And I think that we have to understand that there are consequences. Let me point out a few things. In the United States, we have this tendency to act as if every disaster that affects us is the worst possible disaster that's ever afflicted the planet. And we also have a tendency to minimize disasters that are taking place in other places. So on September 11, 2001, 3,000 people were murdered in a terrorist attack, and it was horrendous. Yet, in 1965, the Central Intelligence Agency and the British intelligence collaborated in a coup in Indonesia that resulted in the deaths of 500,000 to 3 million people. 500,000 to 3 million people over the course of about a year.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, we don't stop and say, my God, I mean, what do we now do? I mean, just think about what the impact that has on any country. And we don't stop and say, if we have a level of culpability in such a thing, what are we doing to repair the damage? You don't walk away from a horrific massacre and just say, well, you know, look, that was the Cold War, that was then. I mean, can you imagine anyone saying, well, we'll let the Al-Qaeda walk away. You know, that was 5 years ago. You know, things happen, life moves on. You can't imagine anyone saying that, and no one should. Because the perpetrators of those murders on September 11th need to be brought to justice. Yet we have these double standards, and we act as if ignorance can excuse our inaction. And so this is just as true in Africa, so that it's not about charity. It's about repairing damage and recognizing that we are part of the planet. The planet is not part of us.
Well, charity, for one thing, maintains the status quo. I mean, we have poor in this country who, in the United States, who without the kind of charitable work done by churches and community groups and, to some extent, the government, probably would be starving to death or at least suffering vast problems associated with the poor in other countries. But giving them charity only, we should give them that. We shouldn't let them starve. I'm not saying that. But it maintains the status quo. It maintains a permanent poor class.
That's
if
right.
I will. Yeah.
So, no, that's absolutely right. And people don't want charity. I mean, I had this debate with this right-winger a couple of weeks ago. And he was basically implying that Africans and African Americans are looking for charity. Well, they're not looking for charity. There's a when your home has been damaged, you look for justice. You're not looking for that's not charity. You're looking for the damage to be repaired, and that's what we're saying. And interestingly enough, there are these very weird standards that are held. So one of the things that you hear some people on the political right say is that we've put all this money into Africa and it's just been a waste. And so part of the answer I would start with is, well, let's talk about what money has gone in. Certainly a lot of military aid has gone in. And has that helped Africa? Absolutely not. In fact, it's bloated the military bureaucracies and it's undermined democracy. So that hasn't helped. Has there been much infrastructure aid offered by the United States? Well, the answer is basically no. Can we expect countries that were the victims of slavery, colonialism, and the Cold War to at this point be self-sustaining? And the answer is no. I mean, Israel is not self-sustaining. Israel has had a constant infusion of U.S. assistance since it first got started. And no one blinks an eye about that. Yet, when it comes to Africa, we act as if, well, you know, we've given this aid, they should be able to be on their own.
I certainly think there's a racial component because, for one thing, if you look at the old Greek definition of tragedy, it can only happen to the highborn. I mean, for real. And so that, I don't know if you've heard this slogan over the last few days, but what happened in London, they say in Iraq, they call it Tuesday.
That's right.
And that happens every day. Bill Fletcher, we're going to run out of time real quickly, and I want to get to the G8 meeting in Glen Eagles. They've pledged a lot of money, and they're saying that they're addressing these problems. Are they addressing the right problems, and is it enough money?
No, it's not enough money, particularly when you look at the amount of money that's being wasted on the illegal war and occupation in Iraq. And it's also very unclear when this assistance will actually come through. But on top of that, when you look at what has happened in the case of the debt cancellation, it's really the G8 speaking with forked tongue, because they're saying, oh, no, we're going to cancel the debt of the heavily indebted countries. Well, yeah, they're doing that, but they're doing that after those countries have effectively surrendered their sovereignty. Because you may remember when President Bush talked about these countries met certain conditions. Well, that's when many people had an aha moment. And they said, oh, the conditions. Well, what are these conditions? Well, one of those was that the countries had to remake their economies to fit what the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank thought their economy should look like. So instead of saying these countries deserve debt cancellation because of the way that these loans started in the first place, they're saying, no, you have to surrender your sovereignty. And it's sort of like if I were to say to you, I will cancel your debt, but you have to divorce your spouse. You have to send your children to a school I want them to go to where there's a curriculum I want them to use, and you have to buy the food that I'm going to supply. That's not exactly building any kind of self-sufficiency.
Well, we just kind of briefly, and probably maybe that's all that's really necessary, just kind of went over Live Aid and Make Poverty History groups and what have you. Here we are in Detroit. I know we could get a hold of Trans Africa Forum. I would suggest people do that. They can go to your website, transafricaforum.org. But this all seems out of our hands locally, or is it?
No. I'm glad you raised that, because I absolutely understand that. It does feel like the sea is so big, our boat is so small. But part of what can happen, and it's happened in the past. You think about the anti-apartheid struggle and the support movement in the United States in the 1980s. Part of what has to happen is integrating these issues into activities that we're already doing, whether it's union activities, community-based organizations, fraternities, sororities, where you take up an issue of foreign policy and you start to do some basic education about why we should be concerned. That's where I would actually start. Why should we be concerned? Why should we be concerned about Africa? Why should we be concerned about the Caribbean and Latin America and Asia? Why should we be concerned about anything outside of our borders? And then what helps is to take an issue. You don't have to take the whole nine yards. You don't have to take every issue under the sun. Some people around the country have taken up the question of Darfur, the western region of the Sudan. Other people have taken up the issue of pharmaceutical genocide when it comes to HIV and AIDS. Other folks have taken up issues like this notorious Central America Free Trade Agreement, which the right wing is trying to get past.
Bill Fletcher, we're going to have to end it there. There's no way to give short answers for this. The problems are so immense. With the old slogan, too, from the 80s and the 90s, think globally, act locally. Good place to start, transafricaforum.org. Bill Fletcher, president of the group, has been my guest on the Peter Werby Show. Thanks so much for being with me.
Thank you very much.
Want to get to the next level of your career? If working harder at your job won't help, work smarter by earning a bachelor's or master's degree at University of Phoenix, the nation's largest accredited private university. It's college designed for busy working adults. In most cases, you can earn a degree in only 2 to 3 years. To find out how, call 1-800-664-1391. At the University of Phoenix Detroit campus, the small classes are designed for working adults with busy lives. You'll cover more material in less time with convenient classes in the evening or on the weekend. At University of Phoenix, you can do this. Call now for a brochure on degree programs in business, technology, nursing, education, and more. 1-800-664-1391. Programs vary by campus. Call University of Phoenix now, 1-800-664-1391. That's 1-800-664-1391. From the aquarium that's nice to look at to a real man's fish tank, sharks and all. Want to see just how cool your home or office aquarium could be? Then you need to stop by Aquatic Discoveries. Your aquarium's potential is about to take a great big step up, courtesy of Aquatic Discoveries. Whether you're an aquarium owner looking to upgrade or you're looking for that perfect gift, Aquatic Discoveries has you covered. Aquatic Discoveries has one of Metro Detroit's largest selection of freshwater and saltwater fish, invertebrates, crustaceans,